The Kevin and Bean Show. You're listening to the best of Kevin and Bean here on the world famous K-Rock 106.7 FM KROQ. It is a pleasure to be with you as always. In the morning, I'm Ralph Garman, walking the show biz beat. Kevin and Bean are on vacation, but I am here all week long. In fact, later on in the show, we're going to have some more live fun with Petros Papadakis. He's going to be stopping by, and we're going to take a look at last night's Bachelorette with the Bachelorette Report. Oh, the kids love the Bachelorette. But in the meanwhile, let's get to some show business. It looks like NBC has finally had an ass full of Donald Trump. The company announced yesterday they are ending their business relationship with this bonehead. Because he's just a dope. He's just an idiot. That's what they said. Just he's too much of an idiot for us to be in business with. NBC will no longer air Trump's beauty pageants, the Miss USA and Miss Universe pageants, and he will no longer host its TV series Celebrity Apprentice. And I thought it was interesting, although Trump is out, that show looks like will continue because it's not Trump's show. It's the brainchild of Mark Burnett, the man who gave us Survivor. So they will find a new host, and that show will live on. But NBC just simply could not stay in business with this guy after he said many things, but primarily what he said about Mexicans coming to America. Let me remind you. He said, the U.S. has become a dumping ground for everyone else's problems. When Mexico sends its people, it's not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems. They're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. Well, nice of you to throw that in there.
Oh, shit, here we go.
It's a race war.
It's on.
You're right.
Race war. Race war's on, everybody. It's going down. It's going down. Race war. Come on. Race war.
So Univision, of course, had to back out in participating in these beauty pageants. And now the entire network had to say, you know what? No, we can't. No more. Now, Trump fired back, releasing a statement saying he stands by his statements on illegal immigration, which are accurate, he says, in his own mind. He called NBC weak, and like everybody else, is trying to be politically correct. That's why our country's in serious trouble. Yeah, that's it. It's because of NBC, Donald. And regarding his television dealings with the network, he is threatening to sue, of course, because that's what he does. Their contract violating closure of the Miss USA, Miss Universe will be determined in court. They will stand behind lying Brian Williams, but they won't stand behind people that tell it like it is. If you want to tell it like it is, brush your hair back. Let's see really what that hairline looks like. Let's be completely honest, Donald, and let's see what's going on under that insane comb over of yours. Because we're all fascinated.
I've made my decision.
Yeah.
You're fired.
That's what NBC said to you. You're fired. Interesting list from Forbes magazine of the top 100 highest paid celebrities over the past year. Now, for the first time, at least in my memory, this also includes athletes on this list. And that's who tops off the list. Floyd Mayweather, due to his fight with Manny Pacquiao, is the big winner this year, making an unbelievable $300 million this year. I would get into the ring with Floyd Mayweather for like 10. Give me $10 million. I'll let him beat me up. Manny Pacquiao, his combatant, was number two on the list with $160 million he earned this year. And Katy Perry earned $135 million this year. The band One Direction collectively made $130 million, made the number four. Surprisingly, and you don't think of this guy as being this wealthy because he's not that high profile anymore now that he's on satellite radio. Howard Stern made $95 million. He was number five on the list. Garth Brooks was sixth with $90 million. James Patterson, the author, $89 million. Then there was a tie between Robert Downey Jr. and Taylor Swift, both making $80 million this year. And then the top ten is rounded out with another athlete, Cristiano Ronaldo. He plays a game, I believe it's called soccer? I don't know. They don't play it here in these United States, but apparently it's very popular overseas. So those are rich people for you. Enjoy. More rich people in the news. Jessica Simpson, her fashion line is worth like $1 billion. It's so successful that the brand plans now to open a string of stores within the next year that will carry just her stuff. The Jessica Simpson boutiques will launch in Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York City sometime mid-next year. The label's currently sold only in mainstream department stores here in the U.S., but why give them any of the money when you can just open up your own store and have Jessica come by and have a couple cocktails with you there while you're browsing. Have a good time. And we mentioned The Bachelorette, of course. We will be talking about that later on today with our buddy Petros Papadakis. Amy Schumer, the comedian, of course, has that new movie Trainwreck coming out, said that she would actually consider doing The Bachelorette. There had been some talk about it because she appeared as a guest in one of the episodes and was just loved by everybody who watched. But she said she has a set of conditions. In an interview with E! News on Monday, she said she would do it if the following three conditions were met. One, a lot of money. Well, that goes without saying. Two, she'd get to be herself. Well, I can't imagine they would want it any other way. And number three, she would like to alter the casting process. She said it would have to be different. She said there would have to be something done about the show's weird job descriptions for contestants. It's like former investment banker? Flower enthusiast? How could you go and leave your life, she said. I love it. It's like I have five kids at home, but I came here to follow my heart. Maybe you should follow your heart and take care of your kids. So, fans have been rallying for Amy to be on the show. We'll have to wait and see what next season's all about, but I'm hoping it's a Bachelor season, and they got to get Ben Z in, because he's just dreamy. Can't believe she let him go last night. Spoilers. We're going to talk about it later. Today's celebrity birthdays. One of our favorites around here, David Alan Greer. He is 59 years old today. Mike Tyson's 49. Happy birthday, Mike. Thank you so much. I can't believe I'm 49 years old. I have pigeons. I have pigeons older than me. Monica Potter's 44 years old. Modest Yahoo. Oh, we have to get on a little Modest Yahoo later in the show. Chip, hook me up a little Modest Yahoo, all right? I'm sure Kevin knows all about it. He gets the updates.
Oh, I'm sure he knew it was his birthday today.
Yeah, he gets the updates. He's on the Modest Yahoo email list. He's 36 years old. Actress Lizzie Kaplan from that sex show. What's that sex show she does? Masters of Sex, that's it. Yeah, 33 years old. And swimmer Michael Phelps celebrates his 30th birthday today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Actor Dermot Mulroney later this hour here on The Kevin and Bean Show. The star of the new film Insidious 3. That's coming up. Brian Fuller, creator of Hannibal, next hour as well. Hey, Allie McKay.
Yes, Bean.
You strike me as a glass of wine and an Ambien kind of girl.
Do I?
Yeah.
How dare you? It's vodka or scotch.
Okay.
And Ambien.
Ambien's good stuff, right, though?
I've actually never taken it, but I've seen the effects of fighting the Ambien, if you will.
Really?
Yeah.
You've been around people who have been taking Ambien, but what's the point of fighting? And if you take Ambien, isn't it because you need to sleep?
Oh, you've never fought the Ambien.
Why would you fight the Ambien, I guess is my question.
It becomes a whole different experience. So instead of falling asleep, which is what it's prescribed for, mm-hmm. you fight it, and apparently hallucinations.
So you do it on purpose to get the hallucinations.
Right.
Oh, I got to try that.
Yeah. Well, I am not saying you should, but I have seen people and I have talked to friends that are supposed to be meeting us to go out, and their response is, I'm going to stay in. We're going to fight the Ambien. What?
By the way, Chip, if your next band is not called Fight the Ambien, then you're not living your life right. That's
fantastic.
I'm writing
that down right now.
That's awesome. Although they probably see you because it's probably a registered trademark. I'm one of those lucky people. I don't take Ambien very often. I've only taken it a few times in my life. But I am one of those people for whom it works exactly as prescribed. It just puts me off into a beautiful, sound sleep, and I wake up the next day completely refreshed and feeling great. But there are so many horror stories, and not necessarily bad things happening to you, but just things that you do while you're under the influence of Ambien or Xanax or something else that you just have no memory of. And those are the stories. It's been a while since we've revisited this topic. Those are the stories we want to hear from you about right now. The stuff that you did on Ambien or something that you had to be told about the next day, give us a call at 1-800-520-1067. Here's why this is in the news right now. There's a TV show in Britain called Dirty Sanchez, as I understand it. And it's our Jackass. It's just like Jackass. It's a bunch of bros who do stunts and crazy things and hurt each other and get in silly situations. One of the stars of that show is called Matt Pritchard. He's on a plane. There's actually photographs of this. He's on a plane and he was very drunk and ended up taking Xanax on this plane. Now, you saw the article. Does it say why he needed Xanax? Was he trying to sleep? Is that what it was?
He wanted to be put to sleep so he could just get on the plane. That was it. Won't remember any of it. But instead, he was drunk when he took the Xanax, which they shouldn't be combined.
Not a good combination.
No.
Yeah, he probably he was super drunk and he thought, you know what? It's a long ass flight from Britain to America. I just want to sleep and wake up and feel great on the other side. So he takes his Xanax. What he did instead of sleeping that he did not know about until he woke up later is he peed all over Dolph Lundgren.
And he stripped naked, too, which is a big part of my in-flight entertainment.
So he is completely naked, running up and down the aisles of the airplane, and at one point he just peed all over, yes, Dolph Lundgren, you know him from Rocky IV. No memory of it whatsoever. Completely apologized after he woke up. He says that Dolph Lundgren had also forgiven him, saying that he shook his hand and told him not to worry about it, which seems like a very gracious way to accept being peed on by a naked man on an airplane flight. But that's exactly the type of thing. I guess you just have no way of knowing how one of these drugs is going to affect you until you take it, and it does. But craziness, right? Back to Ambien for a second. I had to look this up because it's been a while since it happened, but I remember the story now that I see these details. There was there have been several cases of people who have committed crimes under Ambien, and it has worked as a defense to various degrees. But this is a woman who went to bed one night, and she woke up hours later in custody and had no idea how she'd gotten there. And it turned out that on Ambien, she had gotten out of bed, got dressed, took her dog out, got in the car, started driving around town, ended up getting into a traffic accident, had no memory of any of this. At the scene, the police said she was all glassy-eyed. They booked her for DWI and put her in jail. And she ended up fighting it hard because she had the kind of job that had a security clearance, where something like that, kind of a conviction, would make her lose her job.
Right.
And she ended up winning the case because it says right there on Ambien, hey, you may do things while you're sleeping that you have no memory of. That is one of the side effects of Ambien for some people, for a small percentage of people.
Wow. Wasn't there a congressman or something that he kept getting DUIs and then he realized, oh, no, it's every time I take Ambien?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Right?
That does sound familiar. That's right. All right, so let's hear some stories from you. What has happened when you've been on Ambien or been on the Xanax or whatever, things that you did while you were asleep that you didn't remember? Has that happened to you? We want to talk to you at 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we start on line one here, please, Chip? This is in Thousand Oaks, and we get Brett on the line to get us going. Hey, Brett, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Thanks so much for he just hung up on
us. We just lost him.
What happened to Brett?
Ambien.
Brett's a dick. How about line three? We'll go to Orange and talk to Hannah. Hi, Hannah.
Yeah. Hi, good morning, Kevin and Bean, Allie.
Hi.
Ambien talk, we love it.
Xanax talk, actually. I was going out for my birthday, and I was really nervous because I was meeting up with a few people and a guy I'd been talking to. So I took a Xanax, not really thinking about it, really low dose, but I was drinking with it, and the next morning, everyone's like, you got a lap dance from a midget.
Best birthday ever.
And I didn't believe them. I had no idea. And they pulled up a video, and I was sitting there smacking his butt, like loving it.
That is fantastic. So you were having a good time, and you were in a safe place because you were among friends and stuff, but you literally don't remember the whole evening.
I have no recollection of the midget. I thought that they were messing with me. I thought they were joking and just trying to tell me because they thought that I was drunk and I didn't remember. But they showed me the video, and there was definitely a midget lap dance.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Hey, why did you take the Xanax, by the way? That seems like a weird thing to do kind of on your way out the door with friends.
No, and it wasn't on the way out the door. I had taken it earlier. I just expected it to be kind of worn off because it's
gotcha.
A pretty low dose. And,
gotcha.
You know, I wasn't taking it to, like, go party.
Gotcha. All right. Great call. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it, Hannah. Let's go to Ian now. Santa Monica, line five, please. Ian, you were up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. You were under the influence of Xanax, it looks like, right?
Correct. Xanax. Been out drinking pretty much till 2 in the morning with a bunch of buddies and a couple of girls. Came back to my house, decided to pop a Xanax, and the girls were sleeping on the couch. I walked downstairs naked and urinated on my kitchen floor, put one paper towel down, poured another drink, and walked back upstairs. And the next day, they didn't believe it. They told me about it, and I said, you're full of baloney. And they said, go into your kitchen and look. And sure enough, there was one single paper towel on the floor.
Well, I like the attempt at cleaning it up.
Exactly. You know, that's I guess, the beauty of it. So.
Hey, it's more than your dog ever does. Thank you for the call, Ian. We appreciate it. Rachel, you hang on. Eric as well. Nick, we'll talk to you next on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. They're a great band, but my band, Fighting the Ambient, is going to be even better. I'm now committed. Now that we have the name, I'm committed to getting a band going. We are talking about fighting the Ambien or losing to the Ambien. If you've done crazy things under the influence of that plus alcohol or Xanax plus alcohol, we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Why don't we start with Eric? He is in Diamond Bar on line 3. Eric, thank you for calling. Thank you for holding. What happened and what were you on?
So a couple of months ago, I was lucky enough to be invited to be in my sister's wedding. So I woke up that day feeling a little nervous, knowing I'd have to be in front of the crowd of a couple hundred people. Ended up taking a Xanax, drinking a little bit. Didn't go, like, overboard, but in the end, what ended up happening was I fell asleep at the reception with a plate of food in front of 200 or 300 of my family members.
Face down in the food.
What's that?
Face down in the food?
Not face down in the food, right next to it, though. And I woke up the next day with all my family members asking me, oh, what's wrong, you know? What do we do? What are you doing with your life? And
now, let me ask you, you sound pretty chill. Why did you need the Xanax? You don't seem like a real amped up kind of guy.
No, I'm not usually amped up at all. It's just, I don't know, it's just an anxiety thing, I guess.
I love that you were nervous. You took it because you were nervous about being in the ceremony and being in front of all those people. And then it went so much worse for you than it would have if you hadn't taken it. That's the greatest part of that story.
That worse.
Exactly. All right, sir. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. I think you're right, Allie. I don't think Eric needs anything.
He needs
no help. Let's go to East L.A. and speak with our man Rick. He's on line 6, and he's up next. Hey, Rick, what's going on, dude? Hey, Rick.
I have 3 experiences.
Three? You're a guy who does not learn from his mistakes.
Well, I have insomnia, so I need to have a drink before I...
Rick? All right. I enjoyed that. Nick is in Newport Beach. He's up next. He's on line 7. You think Rick just fell asleep right in the middle of that call?
I think so.
Took a Xanax while he was on hold or something?
Yeah, my buddy, it was his 21st birthday, and right before, it was our senior year in college, finals week. He had a brutal schedule. His last, like, 3 tests all ended up on the day before his 21st birthday at midnight. So he put this big combination of Xanax, sleep, and studying, and somewhere along those lines, he lost track of the date because he was so in and out of, like, groggy sleep. So the night of his 21st at midnight, I'm at the library at, like, 11:45, rush home, sprint into his room. I say, hey, dude, are we going out for your birthday? He's like, what are you talking about? Like, it's not my birthday. I was like, yes, it is. And then everyone else in the room was on kind of his same, you know, schedule. So we're like, what? Like, no way. And sure enough, like, he's like, starts going on his computer. He's like, why am I getting all these Facebook notifications that it's my birthday? I'm like, I told you it's your birthday. So sure enough, after like 15 minutes of arguing, he realized that he has missed his 21st. The college we went to does this big, big thing at midnight for your 21st. He missed all of it. We ended up drinking like 2 beers, and he passed out again.
That is fantastic. That is a story that he will remember his 21st birthday so much more than if you guys had just gone out and had a party.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Rhonda. She's up next, Westchester. You know, I've heard lots of stories about people who do things like clean the house or eat or bake a cake or something like that under the influence of Ambien. It sounds like that may be you, right, Rhonda?
Oh, yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Apparently I would wake up and cook, and I didn't know that. And I one day woke up and painted a really pretty picture. And cleaned up after myself, went to bed. Next morning, I noticed it sitting on the dresser table, and I was like, oh, weird. Didn't really think much of it. And then a couple weeks later, I woke up with a spoon coming toward my mouth. I was eating ice cream at 3 a.m. Don't remember any of it, but I was like mid-scoop.
Isn't that
something? And I was like, what the? And so I freaked out and Googled it, and I realized people like drive and do all this crazy stuff. So I, of course, got rid of them, and the next day, I was telling my husband, and he's like, yeah, I used to always find dishes next to the sink. And he goes, you do that a lot, I think.
That's a really common side effect of Ambien is people who eat while they're on Ambien and don't remember it. You know, I would just be so terrified when I've seen those stories too, Rhonda, about people who drive. I mean, I think if I was going to take Ambien and I knew that it had any kind of weirdo effect on me other than just putting me to sleep, I think I would just hide those keys or put them out in the under a bush in the yard or something, because that would be the most terrifying thing in the world to wake up, find yourself driving, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I would be terrified waking up, finding out I cook something. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I was telling him. He's like, yeah, you always... I would be a big fry fan. He's like, you probably made a quesadilla.
I'm
like,
awesome.
I love quesadillas. So I was like...
All right, Rhonda, we really appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Hey, Brett is back in Thousand Oaks. Let's make him our final call. He's on line one. Brett, sorry we lost you a minute ago. What were you telling us, dude?
Oh, no, man. I guess apparently my fiance catches me. I take Xanax, and when I wake up from the Xanax high, when I sleep, I cook my ice cream in the microwave.
Well, sure you do.
Apparently...
That's how it's best. You know, so one thing I know about ice cream is the hotter it is, the better it is.
Yeah, there's cereal under the sink and peanut butter under the sink, all kinds of food's just everywhere, man. I don't know how to explain it.
Good times. Thanks for the call, dude. Dermot Mulroney, next on K-Rock. There's a thing called Broga, you guys. Not a joke, not a Saturday Night Live skit. It is for real. It is called Broga. Apparently men are late to the party, but they are now discovering the advantages of yoga. And I didn't realize this. Allie, maybe you know more about this than I do. I don't know anything about exercise. I didn't realize that many men are uncomfortable going to yoga classes with women. They don't like being in those kind of sometimes embarrassing pretzel-like positions around a lady. Is that a thing? Have you heard about that?
I think notoriously men can't stretch in the same way as ladies can. So
right.
If you see a woman just bendy like a pretzel and you can barely even bend over and touch your knees.
Yeah.
That could be a little embarrassing for a man's ego.
Here's a financial analyst quoted in this story. His name is Eric Ray. He lives in San Jose. He says, I consider myself an athletic guy, but I've never been flexible, and I didn't like the thought of embarrassing myself in front of a group of women. So he and others go to this place called Broga, which apparently is huge. Apparently it's in 22 states now and spreading fast.
Last week, I think we talked about fat yoga. This time it's bro yoga.
That's right. Broga, right. So we wanted to find out more about this. So we asked Dave, who can we talk to? We do have an instructor, a Broga instructor named Braden Forrester is on the line. Mr. Forrester, thank you so much for joining us, sir. We appreciate it.
Yo, bros, what's up, man?
Whoa, that's a,
wow.
That's a lot.
Broga!
What? Wait a second.
Broga!
That's not what I expected. I thought Broga was supposed to be like mellow and it's supposed to be peaceful and quiet.
No way, man. We're more about the burn, about the stretch, than we are about getting your chakras aligned, you know? I'm your leader, man. I'm like Broby One Kenobi.
I'm sorry that I don't really know anything about regular yoga, so I don't know how is Broga different.
Different ways. You know, we're not all touchy-feely. No homo, man. No homo.
What?
Very bro.
We're no homo.
Right, I understand. Yeah, you're just talking about the
about the stretch.
Right,
feel your muscles tear. About sweating. It's not about find your inner peace, man. Forget about it. Wow.
are there any yoga moves, or are you just not doing anything?
Of course, we have yoga moves.
Like
the Pillsbury Bro Boy. The roller coaster. Brogy Bear. Hootie and the Brofish. Beer pong.
What?
Oh.
Beer pong?
It's not a move. I just really love beer pong.
Yeah.
Bros!
Now, is there a guitar in the class with you, or is...
No, it just comes out of me. I don't know why.
Oh.
That's coming out of you.
Yeah. Ever since I started using Axe body spray.
And you're finding that men are enjoying this? Are they feeling peaceful when they walk out?
All kinds of men. White dudes, Asian dudes, Afro-Americans.
Wow.
Just pop your collar and come on down. It's sweet!
Sounds like we're missing out, Kevin.
Is this super popular? Do you have a lot of guys coming?
Yeah, like three.
I'm sorry, three?
Yeah, we do it in my basement.
Oh, that's not what I thought it was at all then.
Mostly we just play Madden.
I Ice is rude.
Sense fun.
Ice is better.
That's fun.
Give me your money.
We're discussing a brand new way to look at a fraternity.
All I gotta do is say earmuffs to him.
Make it say, bitch, whatever you want.
Wedding season.
We are gonna have tons and tons of opportunities to meet gorgeous ladies that are so aroused by the thought of marriage that they'll throw their inhibitions to the wind.
Time to put your mouth where our balls are.
How many times do I have to drop hints about the ballet?
I hate the goddamn ballet. You got a bunch of dudes in tights flopping around for 3 hours. It's like a medieval techno show.
My name is Fred Claus.
Hi, Fred.
I'm Santa Claus's brother.
I'm sitting in blood. Marcel, this isn't a drill, buddy. You got real sharks here. It's time to get the guns, and it's time to shoot some fish.
Whenever you have a tiger, flames, and wings all in the same logo, this is inspiring for the watch.
I don't know. What are we in a doo-wop group?
Here, for your information, doo-wop groups were known to close ass. Singing was their hobby. Closing ass was their job.
I will not be grabbing a cold one with you.
You get high?
I don't get high.
Dating a fellow intern.
Is a one-night stand considered dating?
What have I said a million times? If you've got all the money in the world and you're making a movie, you're looking for a comedy all-star, there's one name, and that name is Seth Rogen. But if you can't get him, I'm telling you people, Vince Vaughn, that's your man, is Vince Vaughn from the new film Unfinished Business, and he joins us back in studio on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. How are you, sir?
Great to be with you guys. It's been a while. How you been?
It's been a while. We're good. Yeah, we catch up with you on the phone for most of your movies. You're usually traveling around the world peddling your product, but it's great to have you in town.
Yeah.
It's good to see you.
Living here, back here in Los Angeles again, so it's nice to be able to come down and see you in person, although you are in Seattle currently, so it's nice to hear you over the phone and see everybody else.
Now, what was that like? So you, if I remember correctly, you married a civilian a few years ago, right?
That's right. It was a civilian. A Canadian civilian.
Oh, a Canadian, wow. Too. She had no idea who you were then. She lived in the hinterlands.
That's right. Very nice Eskimo lady, though.
Oh, nice.
Well, it's fine, but I gave, like, gifts to the family. It wasn't her choice, sure. But it's, you know what I mean? There's no arguing.
She's adapting.
She's fine. She doesn't have a lot of a choice, but yes, adapting is a word we could use.
So you didn't have to go live in an igloo. She came to live in your mode of home, right?
That's right.
Okay.
I wrestled the men of the village, and she was my prize.
So I'm just trying to put it together. So you moved away. You actually left California for a while and lived in and tried to have a personal life and raise a family?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Chicago. I was raised in Chicago, but I always felt like I grew up here, and because I moved when I was 18, right after high school. And me and you were actually, as we've spoken many times, were neighbors for a while on Rossmore.
Right.
And so when I first had the kids, I went back to Chicago because with little kids, I don't like the idea of going out and every time you go to get something to eat or do something that there's paparazzi. So.
Do they not try and be sensitive to kids?
They haven't been sometimes. You know, they just want their photos or whatever, and I understand it. But, you know, as a parent, it's like, you don't want to feel like you're walking around and someone's popping out and taking a photo. But
of course not.
Anyway, I ended up here in the South Bay where, there isn't a lot of that, and it's been great. It's I love it there, and we get to...
How long were you gone, Vince, and did you miss L.A.?
I did. Yeah, I did. I mean, I love Chicago. That's home for me, but, I made a life out here, so, this is my home.
I don't mean this at all in a disrespectful way, but what can a photo of Vince Vaughn be worth in 2014 or whatever
wow.
it was?
I'm glad you didn't mean to be disrespectful, Dan.
No, but just, I mean,
it's not taken disrespectfully at all.
What's the market?
Well, no, I'm glad you asked that question, and it's not. There's no disrespect. No disrespect intended or received.
Excellent.
That photo goes for a lot of bones. It's going to cost someone a lot of bones.
Really?
Yeah. There's been. I don't want to say second homes bought on it, but yeah, there's. Been some maybe a down payment, maybe 20%
in the parking lot. Actually, you were moving some product out there in the parking lot.
Well, you have very good eyes, and yeah. it wasn't photos I was moving. So mind your own business. If you want some, you can have it, and it's free. And then if you want more, and your friends like it, come back and we'll talk about a price.
I understand.
Okay. That 5 minute thing.
That's right.
I love that there's a guy who's going down to the going down to the newsstand every Friday, going, "Gotta get me some Vince Vaughn pictures. What's that guy been up to?"
That guy has a really rich life. I don't know why you're judging him. Why you want to bring in negativity to the table?
Yeah.
Why would you want to hate someone who's working from a beautiful place?
That's a good point, Vince. I'm
My
sorry.
Gosh.
I misread the situation.
My goodness.
I'm so
you're
sorry.
Like, you're like one of the Rangers that made fun of Rudolph for being special. This has turned ugly. And you're better than that, Bean.
He's not.
No.
He really is.
Yeah, no, actually he is.
He's not.
Okay, he's not.
We know better.
We had you in. How many years ago was the who hurt you conversation?
15?
Oh, well, Vince wouldn't know, but it was definitely in the mid. It was definitely mid 90s.
We rocked it mid 90s with that.
He gave you one of those backhanded compliments, and you just stopped the entire interview, and you said, "Who hurt you?" And you just started
Burrow, can I tell you something?
That was awesome.
Love comes in all kinds of forms. Maybe that was some tough love, yeah. But it was a hug. It was a wet kiss is what it was. Right. I'm not going to have it described as anything different.
No.
Well, you forced me to reevaluate myself, that's for sure.
Well, you know, if an oil check is good, but let's not over-focus on it. Let's get you back out playing with the other kids.
Unfinished Business is the new film that's in theaters everywhere this Friday.
By the way, saw it last night. Love
this film. Yes, right?
It's our comedy. It's nice to be in something that's adult, and it's got a lot of big laughs in it, so it was fun.
I want to talk about the casting for a minute, because Tom Wilkinson, who is one of the greatest actors in the world
today. I know
today,
what you're thinking. Why is he slumming with me and Franco?
No, I'm not thinking that at all.
Why are you throwing Franco in with that?
Well, because me and Franco run around making jokes like a couple of smacked asses, and this guy's got the Oscar nodding at him. So, yeah, it's not an obvious choice.
But is incredible, because you usually see him playing these super intense, dramatic roles. But he was in... What was the first big movie we saw him? The Full Monty, right? Didn't we see him in The Full Monty? Is that when he broke out? But since then, it's been all drama, and it was just so refreshing, and he was so funny in this film playing the comedy. He's great at it.
He's a great actor, and he came with a good spirit. And a lot of times, I think guys who do drama, they get excited to come do something different like comedy. So I think he's great in the movie, and he was a lot of fun, and we had a lot of laughs with him.
He brings the gravitas, too, that in his character, he is the older guy who's been around the block a few times, and he's a little bit wiser even than you are in this situation when he's doing the business.
Well, that's up for interpretation.
I'm just saying it's hard.
I understand. But then you have to interpret the interpreter and how wise they are.
So I'm just saying
it's a conversation.
It was effective.
It's at least a conversation.
Like someone who's older and much smarter than you are.
Again, it's a conversation.
That's pretty much fact.
Well,
I was in the film. I think
the only thing we can agree on is that you're really declaring a lot about yourself. Which isn't bad. If you were all the way there, what fun would life be?
That
you've got some room to grow, I think you got a lot to be excited about.
All right, Vince, for people who haven't seen the movie yet, describe your character and then Franklin Wilkins.
Well, I think my character in the movie is kind of a guy who is tired of sort of being in a corporate, kind of like a hamster on the wheel, and so he wants to do something different. It feels like a good idea, but then when the dream of it isn't matching with reality, it's a bit of a struggle. And Dave is a kid, he's a little touched. He sees the world a little differently, maybe.
Yeah.
He's got some gifts that could be seen as challenges. He's kind of inexperienced when it comes to taking a business trip, so he's kind of down for a good time.
All right, before we get to Tom, I want to play a clip of the movie, and this is Franco.
What did you do at Dynamic?
No, I don't work there.
You just walked out of there.
Well, I interviewed.
But you got a box with office belongings there?
Yeah, I brought it to the interview to show competence.
Do you have any sales experience?
Yes, I do.
Great.
Yeah, Foot Locker.
And reasons for leaving?
I don't like feet.
He's so good.
I think he crushes it in this movie.
I do,
Dave.
Too. Yeah.
He's really, really funny.
And when I started watching it, I was a little bit afraid, like, oh, no, this is just a one-note guy. But he pulls it off through the whole thing, and you end up loving him.
I think not only is he really funny, but he's got a real warmth to him in the movie, too. You end up really liking him. But he's just hilarious.
And funny. And Tom's character.
Yeah, Tom is like, you know, like you said, although some of it a little bit, but he's an older gentleman. He has a level of wisdom that's high for the average person. But he's kind of a guy at the end of his career who now is kind of, you know, kind of one last hurrah. He actually wants a divorce. He does not want to be married anymore, but he wants to have some money to leave to his wife. He wants to do it with dignity and class. And so this trip for him is sort of meaningful so that he can kind of start a new life.
Even though she looks like a vending machine, he wants to give her a couple of bucks.
Yes, he says she does resemble a vending machine, and that they don't make love, and that the love life isn't good. That's correct. Yeah.
Vince, do you have a you must get offered so many scripts per year, and you can only do so many. Do you feel like you have a pretty good radar for what's funny or what's going to work for you?
You know, I don't know. It's like sometimes you're just an actor for hire, and you kind of go in, and it's not really up to you. And sometimes you go in thinking you're hitting one target and making a certain kind of movie, then you realize that the director or the studio is going in a direction that you didn't realize that they were doing. And that can be frustrating. So I think the most fun you have is if everyone's trying to do the same thing, you share a sense of humor, and everyone's making the same movie.
Did you help write this at all? Because it seems like it's so you.
No, it's Steve Conrad, who wrote Pursuit of Happiness, actually wrote the movie, and Yeah, I think that this movie is very interesting because it's really funny, and it also just has some interesting, odd perspectives on stuff. There's some things that are kind of surprising, and I think that's really Steve.
And they're not throwaway characters. That's what I love about it. Your character isn't. Franco isn't. Wilkinson. Everybody has a role, and they're great playing, and you're interested all the way throughout the movie. Which
yeah,
most...
I think they dimensionalize them, which is good.
I was talking to Vince in the other room, and I said, as a dad, it's kind of nice to see a comedy where the father isn't just a buffoon, where he's operating at some level of competency and also is motivated by all the right things, not because he's having a midlife crisis or something, but he wants to take care of his kids and his wife, and that's a rare, especially in a comedy. You know?
Yeah, and I liked it, too, because it's like it's easy to kind of make the guy sort of be kind of incompetent. And what I think is cool is that the character is actually a guy who, yes, he has his challenges, but he's the competent guy facing those challenges, which makes it more interesting.
Absolutely. Well, what I think is cool is that we learned that steam rooms in Germany are unisex. That's what I think is cool about the movie.
Yeah, that's fantastic news all around. depending on your physique level, depending on how the muscle tone level. Because you don't want to be the guy in the robe hanging out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't want to be in the Spitz in the full robe checking out the ladies.
Vince, real butt or stunt butt?
The butt was stunt in this particular case, but the torso is absolutely 100% real.
All right. I'll accept
what
that.
What a weird gig to be a stunt butt.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a strange thing.
Can
we bring
me.
In Vince's ass, please?
Ass wrangler. Where's the ass
no,
wrangler?
No. Not Vince the ass. Bring in Vince's ass.
The movie is called Unfinished Business, opening in theaters this Friday, March 6th. Our guest is Vince Vaughn. We'll return more right after this on K-Rock. By the way, tomorrow morning on the Kevin and Bean Show, our friend Kevin Smith stops by. We'll talk sports with Jim Rome, Dr. Drew Pinsky on the program. You got any issues, Vince? You want us to run by Dr. Drew? You need any help?
Well, I don't know if I have it. Well, yeah, of course, there's always issues involved. But
he's a real doctor.
He is a real doctor. He does a real nice job, and he's out there helping people, making a difference. He's making a little money on it. So it's a win-win-win. It's three wins. It's not just a win-win. Right? I want to talk about this quote, this Noah Gallagher quote with Taylor Swift.
I would like to talk about this as well.
All right,
Vince Vaughn,
who is in studio talking about the film Unfinished Business opening up everywhere on Friday, now wants to discuss Noel Gallagher.
But let me just let you know what you're walking into. Bean worships Taylor Swift.
She is my favorite.
Ralph and I can't stand her.
We're not fans.
So that's
and
where
wrong.
That's where we come from. So you tell us about the Noel
Gallagher. I don't have a dog in the fight with Taylor Swift. She seems like a very nice young lady. She's writing her songs and she's doing her thing. I just appreciate always Liam and Noel's kind of, particularly Noel's kind of bluntness, you know, how they sort of go about stuff and the things that they say.
All right, Allie, do you have the quote?
I do. When he was asked about Swift's knack for songwriting, he fired back, "Who says that? Her parents?" And you'd think, okay, funny. Then he went on. They said, well, no, people say that. His response, whose people? Name those people. You're effing lying. She seems like a nice girl, which you just brought up. She seems like a nice girl, but no one has ever said those words, and you effing know it.
I love him so much.
That's so rock.
But what I find funny is, you know, the interviewer might have been just turning it in a direction that he wanted with not real information or facts, and you know that this is kind of the buzz going around. And I like that that's what he focused on. It was like a cite your sources argument. Like if someone gave you statistics that felt
names.
A little inflated to get your point of view across.
So, Vince, when you hear something like that, because you do, you know, you'll probably do 20 interviews today talking about the movie, is there some part of you that is fighting to not say what you really think and to just, you know, be polite and play the game?
Well, I kind of always kind of feel like I state my mind and do stuff. You know, I don't, you know, I like to joke around and do that kind of stuff. But I don't know that I have kind of a real bone to pick with somebody in that kind of way.
Has there ever been a movie that you had to go out and promote that you didn't believe in and you basically just lied about it?
Well, there's been times that you've in that situation. But what I find is that you just kind of nicely not... You know, you avoid that kind of topic, and you don't kind of get into it too much.
But that's a legendary interviewer's trick when they don't want to put their own point of view out there. They'll say, people say. People have been saying.
Well, that's why Noel took that guy's head off.
And that's why it's beautiful.
It's beautiful that he did that. But I always got a kick out of those two, and they were kind of fun mixing it up. You know, they definitely had a point of view about stuff, and the songs were great.
Yeah, but they're stuck at 13 years old, the two of them.
Yeah, there's a problem. There's definitely a
little petulant.
They've definitely got some issues there.
Who do you love musically? You mentioned Oasis. Who else is like if we looked at your phone right now, Vince? What music's on there?
Well, I always like as we were talking, Tom Morello, Rage Against the Machine. I always liked. I think Morello's you know, really really talented. You know, I always liked the Clash, and you know I like, you know. A variety of stuff. I like
Bieber. A lot of Bieber.
Am I a believer? Is that the question?
Yes.
Are you a believer? You know, I don't know what to believe at this point. Right? What are we supposed to believe at this point? Does anyone have a... What's up with the scissor, by the way? What is up with the scissor? What's up with the scissor? What's up with the Fanta and the Dayquil? What's going on? And now that he's 21, does the scissor stop? Because now he can actually go buy like an actual drink. Or does the scissor keep going? I just think these kids are doing Dayquil and grape soda. What's happening? Who comes up with scissor? They won't let us buy booze, but the Dayquil really will rock us. And let's throw some sugar in there to keep us awake.
Ranchers.
So you know, we got Dayquil, so we're not falling asleep. We got caffeine, we're not falling asleep. Let's see if we start making good decisions in about 4 hours, right?
Speaking of good decisions, Vince, we all made fun of Bieber because he went off the rails, and a lot of people tried to defend him by saying, look at what was handed to him when he was 15, 16, 17 years old. You got kind of famous young. Did you ever go crazy and kind of look back now and go, wow, I'm you know, glad I was able to come back from that?
I think it's a little different because I was 18 when I moved out here, and John and I didn't make Swingers till I was 24. So I had lots of real-life rejection and sort of a normal process, you know. And I do think there's some validity when someone's that young and they're put in that situation. And then they're kind of like, what's the barometer for them to even kind of get regular social habits? You know, you don't have that group of friends who kind of keeps you in check or what have you. So I do think there's an understandability for why someone can drift, and I think we see it so many times. It's not like he's a unique case.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those cases, so there's a part of that that's sad. But
still, look, F him, though, right?
Well, I don't know if I'd say F him. I just feel like, you know, it feels like he's at a moment now, and what do I know? But it looks like he's trying to recognize and grow up a little bit. So I always like to see someone kind of get in a better place, you know?
I'm not a fan of his, but I have always said if I get that kind of fame and money when I'm 16, I might be worse than him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like that.
Oh, well, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the music. I mean, it's not my thing at all. The music is nothing that I would listen to. No disrespect to the believers out there.
Sure.
Just shooting straight.
And Bean,
are you a believer? Bean, are you a believer?
No, I'm not at all. Although I liked him very, you know, on his first record, I thought he was enormously talented for his age. I really did. I was really impressed, but it didn't take long after that before he threw it all away. Did you have any trouble adapting to fame when it did come after Swingers?
Did I have trouble adapting to it? Yeah, I think there's a little bit of when it first kind of happens that it's just sort of a new thing that goes on. And, you know, for me, I like going out with hanging out and, you know, still I don't have a group around me or I never been that way. It's against sort of my personality. So it was an adjustment to realize like, hey, I may not be able to go, you know, walk down here or go to the farmer's market or the local thing and just sort of say hi. And then I just sort of pushed through it and kept doing it anyway.
And so now we just hear horrible things about you help out the Special Olympics, doing polar plunges, horrible things like
that's a smokescreen, guys.
USO.
I hide some of the terrible traits that I have. You know that.
No.
Very clever. Yeah. Look at me. I'm helping people out. You guys know I'm hurting people. I'm taking money.
Why was that necessary, by the way? Yeah. The whole jumping in Lake Michigan thing.
You know,
why did that have to happen?
It's unclear. There's lots of ways to bring awareness to stuff.
That's what I was thinking.
It's unclear, but
you could write a check that would be very helpful.
They said we're going to polar plunge and we're going to do this thing, and I was like, yeah, okay, great. And I realized like it's record breaking cold.
Yeah. Right?
What was the temperature that
it was 26? But Lake Michigan is not a warm body of water to begin with. No, it is not.
You should have done some research.
So I was like, all right. And I started walking down the thing, and I get there, and it's fine. But the moment I came out of the water, it does feel like you can't breathe. It's so damn cold. It's really, really cold. But if you look at the photos, I'm smiling like, hey, baby, it's Grizzly.
Right.
I'm playing with the house's money. Come on. Who wants to come back to my place? But really, I was inside, I was freezing. I was wondering, is this where it all stops? I'm glad there's bagpipers who walked me into the water because we could just turn this into a funeral here at the same time. The Celtic women could show up.
Vince Vaughn is here again.
And respect me in song.
That's right.
Again, the film is
who doesn't want to be respected in song?
We all do.
Sure. Unfinished Business is the name of the movie opening up everywhere on Friday. And by the way, Vince is getting his hand and footprint in the cement out in front of the TCL Chinese Theater this morning at 11 o'clock.
Wow.
It is open to the public for folks who want to come down. That's a rite of passage for an actor right there, huh?
Yeah, it's definitely fun to be included, you know. It'll be fun. Favreau's going to introduce me, so
nice.
I look forward to it.
11 o'clock today if you want to come down and see Vince Vaughn again, right in front of the TCL Chinese Theater in Hollywood. All right, a quick break. Come back one more with our friend Vince Vaughn when we return right after this on K-Rock. From this weekend's hilarious movie, Unfinished Business, Vince Vaughn in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Go see the movie, folks. We've all seen it. It's very, very funny. And look for Vince this morning at 11 o'clock out in front of the TCL Chinese Theater getting his hand and footprint ceremony. By the way, speaking of the movie, I know you've been doing a ton of press, bunch of interviews, and we really appreciate you coming by here today, Vince. You also did something a little unusual for publicity. Tell us about the stock photos that you and the cast shot.
You know, I just found out about those. I don't remember doing a shoot for those, but they released these photos where I guess people in offices can look like they're part of an office meeting with Tom Wilkinson and Dave Franco and myself. It looks kind of goofy and funny, but I didn't know that they were doing that. That was news to me. I think it just came out the last couple days.
Was someone wearing a hidden camera and you didn't know you were being shot?
I don't know if they just were able to take images either from film or from still photos and create that, but there wasn't a photo shoot per se of us sitting around in kind of the office.
Don't you love knowing that in some company's introduction manual, in 100 years, your photos are going to be up there? Nobody's going to have any idea who you are. You're just going to be stock photos.
You know, I thought you were going to go darker. I started to think of things that they could be doing to the photos. You know, I thought you made me think that you're right. There's probably people doing all kinds of different stuff to those photos.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's a weird angle to take. It's a weird way to go, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a kind of a strange thing, but it's out there, and do what you want with them. That's your choice.
All right, new business, Vince.
Yes.
You're going to television.
Yeah, you know, I'm doing True Detective, which, you know, I'm really excited about. What I like about it is it's kind of, you know, it's just one, it's eight episodes, so it's a complete story. There's no continuation of it. It's not a series. It's you know, its own kind of long story in that format, and I was really blown away with the first one that they did.
It was amazing.
And it's the same writer, same show creator. And what's awesome about this, it all takes place in L.A. So it's an L.A.-based crime story. And he always does a good job, I think, of getting into different worlds and different cultures and kind of things that are going on. So it's kind of interesting that way. And then the characters are all really, you know, complicated, which as an actor makes it really fun.
Is this just a long play for you to get a Lincoln commercial? Is that where you're heading for here?
No, I have not had any of those negotiations
yet.
How long has it been since you've been on a TV series?
You know, it's been a while.
Have you ever been on a TV series?
Younger, of
besides
course.
Besides just a guest actor, I mean.
No, younger, of course. I was a big deal. I remember I did China Beach. Remember that one?
Sure. Oh, no kidding.
Dana Delaney?
Dana Delaney. I had a couple lines and you found me dead.
Sex in the City.
Sex in the City. I showed up on that. Some after school specials.
Oh, the more you know.
Ralph did after school specials.
You know what?
My first gig ever was an ABC after school special. Yeah.
Teenage Gambling. I did a Teenage Gambling.
That was my issue.
What was yours?
Which, by the way, is what's the problem? You know what I mean? I don't know why you're tackling that. I want you kids out there. I want you taking a shot. You know what I mean? Maybe you lose, maybe you win, but you're living. You're living.
What was your after school special?
Oh, God, I did all of them. You know, it's almost like why Favreau and Swingers wrote the scene talking about the audition for the after school special. But, one was, let's see, unprotected sex, I think, was an issue.
Sure. Now, you were for or against it?
In the show, yes. I think my character was pro unprotected sex.
Okay, yeah. All right, good.
And then, let's see, what else did we tackle? Me and Peter Billingsley, who's been a good friend for a long time. It's actually where I met Peter, and we were tackling the issue of steroids, and we were taking it head on. We were not pulling punches and dealing with steroids. I'm not gonna take a backstep to anyone on this issue. But anyway, Peter Billingsley was an academic, and then Nicole Eggert was a new girl in town, and he fancied her.
Right.
And she made a comment about sports, and so he said, I better get involved in some sports. What better way than shooting up some roids and joining the track team?
Sure. And yeah, beefy for the track
that's
team.
Right. So yeah. Peter Billingsley decided his character, of course, I don't want to blur lines.
Right.
That pumping some roids in his veins on a daily basis and keeping it secret for those extra seconds on the track team might be the way to Nicole's
heart. That sounds awesome.
And then I was his friend who was kind of a jock, and I found out, and I liked him for who he was. You guys know that.
Sure.
And I didn't know why he was doing this, and he asked me to keep this dirty secret just till after the race.
What'd you do?
Well, I kept the secret, although I was concerned. And then guess who collapsed?
No.
You collapsed?
No, he collapsed. Oh. He's the
collapsed.
One running the race.
Taking the steroids.
He collapsed.
Kevin, come on.
He collapsed right before the finish line.
How guilty did you feel?
Well, I didn't feel great about it in character. And then then that set up a beautiful 7-minute monologue where a doctor got to tell everyone listening the downfalls of steroids. So you came for the fun and you ended up learning something. Don't shoot needles in your arm to run track.
Right.
She liked it. You know what the heartbreaking thing of this story was? She would have liked him anyway. Can you believe it? It's like Gift of the Magi, that short story.
If he only knew that.
He had her at hello. He had her at a high. And then he ran this way.
Here's the CBS School Break Special is what it's called. Season 8, Episode 1, called The Fourth Man. Vince, you remember that? Remember what your character's name was, Vince?
That I don't remember.
School Break Special?
I've never heard of that.
That's the low-rent version of the ABC After School Special.
Don't you pee on my fire hydrant.
You were Steve Guarino.
That's right.
Steve Guarino, wanting to seek his father's approval, a high school student starts using steroids to make the track team, but soon these drugs start to take a toll on his body.
You know what? I think if you would have read that right off the bat, then people wouldn't have had to sit through my sloppy explanation of it, because you just said it exactly correct, sir.
No, it was beautiful. Please tell me it's online. I have to see this.
It might be findable. Adrienne Barbeau, she dazzled in that. She was in that thing.
All right.
And it was a powerful, it was a moving one. Get a Kleenex box out for that one, guys, because you're going to see some friendships taken right to the limit.
Oh, I thought it was for Adrienne Barbeau.
Don't you dare.
It's a whole different reason.
Very different.
Don't you dare put your eyes on that unless you got some tissues, guys. We're gonna test the boundaries of friendship.
I think the bookends of your phenomenal 25-year career are going to be the CBS After School Special right there, and then Unfinished Business. I think that's the 1-2 punch you'll be remembered for right there.
Is he done after Unfinished Business?
No, but I just think at 25 years, I think this is a nice place to take a break and reevaluate. And I think we've just done two great things, and those are the two we're talking about.
A little Flugenschlagen at this point.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, listen, we know you got to walk out the door. You got a very busy day. Have fun down there with the hands in the footprint.
This is always my favorite place to come. I love your guys' show, so thanks for having me, and we'll see you down the road.
Sounds great, Vince. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're listening to the best of Kevin and Bean here on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ-FM. Kevin, Bean, Ally McKay, all gone, all dead now. It's just me. I'm the only one left here in the bunker. I don't know how much longer I have. Now, they're on vacation, and I'm here live to bring you the showbiz beat. Also, coming up later in the show, Petros Papadakis is going to be stopping by, and we're going to be talking about the magic that was The Bachelorette last night, featuring a woman so slutty that they had to change the rules of the game for her, which I think is just magical. We'll get into that in not too long, but let's talk about show business news, like today's new release day. Here's what you can get if you're interested. 311 has a four-disc set coming out today called Archive. You can check them out. The soundtrack of Magic Mike XXL is also available. And speaking of X's, X Ambassadors. They've got a new album called VHS that's dropping today. Amongst others, out on video today, Get Hard, the Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart movie. It's available while we're young. With Ben Stiller and Adam Horvitz. We should replay that interview.
It's the best interview
ever.
It's
the best interview ever. I didn't know the video's coming out today. DVD's coming out today. On kids' DVDs, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Cutie Mark Quests is the name of the DVD. You can get that for your kids or for that creepy older dude in your neighborhood who's got all the dolls and goes to the brony convention. And the guy you're afraid to leave your kids by himself. Near as well, too. Tom Bien. TV shows on DVD, The Dove Keepers, Deadwood Season 3. They're just releasing Deadwood now on DVD? Wasn't that off the air about 40 years ago? Good show, though. And True Blood Season 1. This can't be right. This list has to be horribly wrong. Can't be True Blood Season 1 available now on DVD, can it?
That doesn't seem
just
right
now?
Either.
No. Nah. All right, you know what? Don't believe a word I say. Do yourself, do your due diligence, go on the internet and find out what's going on for your own self. Damn it. It's on. It's on like Donkey Kong. No better fight than a fight between two ladies who used to be besties. Now they're worsties. Britney Spears versus Iggy Azalea. Oh. 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 Forget your Pacquiao Mayweather. This is the battle I want to see in Vegas. Just oil him up and put him in the cage. As you know, the two girls worked on a single together. They did a duet called Pretty Girls, which I mocked roundly because it was just hideous. However, I thought it would be a big hit. It was not.
And recently, someone brought that up to Iggy Azalea and said, why wouldn't that song have been more of a success? I'm surprised it was a bit of a dud. Well, Iggy replied via Twitter, you need content to compete in 2015. She said, it's difficult to send a song up the charts without additional promo and TV performances, etc. Unfortunately, I'm just featured, she said, basically throwing her duet partner Britney Spears under the bus. Pretty much hinting that it was Britney who let the team down on this one. Well, Britney's fans went apoplectic over this comment. And if you know anything about these hardcore Britney Spears fans, woo! They will defend her within an inch of their lives. Just a nutty bunch. And so they came after Iggy Azalea. And Iggy, I get the sense, having watched her react to social media over the years, is a bit thin-skinned. And she went off on these Britney fans. My comment is factual, she tweeted. It applies to any song. I don't have to suck a woman's beep 24/7 to be her friend, do I? Bye, girls, she tweeted. Actually, bye, gals, she tweeted in her Australian accent. So now it's on, and she's trying to say, well, Britney and I are still friends, but we can have a difference of opinion. In fact, she tweeted as much. Genuine friends have genuine opinions. It's possible and healthy to have a differing thought without it being bitchy or shade, she tweeted. Well, Britney doesn't feel that way. Britney finally got into the fray via Twitter and is now taking shots at Iggy Azalea, making fun of the fact that she had to cancel the remainder of her tour. Britney tweeted, can't wait to get back to Vegas. So thankful I have shows for the rest of the year to look forward to. Hashtag, you want a piece of me? Oh, snap! It is on! There's going to be bloodshed! There's going to be dyed blonde hair pulled out and strewn about. I'm very excited by this, if you can't tell. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Actor David Alan Grier, very funny man. Most of you know him from In Living Color and his comedies, but he's also an accomplished stage actor. He's been on Broadway, can sing, can do it all. Love Dag. He's 59 years old today. Mike Tyson turns 49. Actress Monica Potter is 44 years old. Lizzie Kaplan from Masters of Sex, 33 years old today. Swimmer, Olympian Michael Phelps is 30. But the reason we celebrate today, it's the 36th birthday of Modest Yahoo. What's this feeling, my lover, in my voice, in a ceiling? Give myself to you now from the essence of my being. And I sing Yama. To my God. Songs of love and shalom. Climate starts revealing. Oh, yeah. What's this feeling, my lover, in the skylight in the ceiling? Give myself to you from Oyama. The essence of my being. And I sing to my God. Oh, makes me want to make a bong out of a bagel right there. That does. That's some good stuff. He is 36 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Every week about this time, we catch up with our friend Dr. Drew Pinsky from K-Rock's Love Line and Dr. Drew on call on HLN Monday through Thursday nights at 6. Hey, Doc. How are you, man?
Good morning.
Got a weird one today.
Oh, really? Something unusual.
Got a very strange one today. First of all, as a physician, what has your experience been with people who are not hypochondriacs, but people who are faking illnesses for the attention? Have you heard of that? Have you dealt with that personally?
Oh, yes, yes. This is sort of commonly called Munchausen. It used to be called Briquettes or Briquet syndrome. And people that are true Munchausens really don't know they're doing it. They actually, when I've dealt with the true Munchausens, they're sort of disorganized and confused when they end up getting surgery. Munchausen really classically was about repeated surgeries. And when they end up getting these surgeries they don't need, and I look back and I go, I told you didn't need this. They're like, what? They seem confused. They don't remember things.
So they're not doing it on purpose at all.
Not purposely. They do get it for the secondary gain of attention. And you see it more clearly with something called Munchausen's by proxy. Munchausen's by proxy is where mothers typically, most oftenly, will make their children sick or seem sick or take them to the doctor and get procedures as a way of getting attention for themselves. It's very
wow. That's disturbing.
Is that a
mental illness?
Yeah. It's a diagnosable condition. Remember, I don't know if you heard that story we covered on HLN. Salt mom, the woman was pouring salt into their child's gastrostomy tube, making the child sick with salt overload. Finally, the brain swelled and the child died.
Oh.
And she's now in jail for murder with Munchausen by proxy. And there was a kid last week who encouraged her male friend, a teenage friend, to commit suicide. that was sort of a Munchausen by proxy type situation. So good times, gentlemen.
Wow. So let's go back to the Lacey Spears is her name. She's the mommy blogger. She's the salt mom. Christine told us about this. She was just convicted this week, as you mentioned. What did she get out of poisoning her kid? Like, what was the draw for her?
She was a mommy blogger who got tons of attention. This poor mom with this sick child. She's dedicating her life to this poor. And the child was cute, and she was such a perfect mom, and going to doctor after doctor after hospital after hospital. Nobody noticed that she seemed to move around an awful lot, and as soon as the doctor started zeroing in and going, hey, this chick is sick, she'd move on to another hospital and start all over again.
Oh, my God. Hey, Doc, are you watching Better Call Saul?
I'm dying to. I've not had time to, but okay. I'm a huge fan, so I will.
I know it seems like a random question to ask, but Michael McKean plays a character who's the brother of Bob Odenkirk's character on that show who thinks he's allergic to electricity. And he wraps himself in foil, and he won't allow any lights or any phones in his house or anything like that. And you know, the storyline is still playing out. But the impression that we get as the viewer is it's all in his head. It's just something that he's making up.
Well, of course. But that's going to go more towards schizophrenia. That's more in a delusional syndrome. And people, you know, people do that kind of stuff all the time. We see it very clearly with stimulants. People become psychotic using stimulants, and they'll put foil up on their windows to sort of keep things out. And that's just part of disturbed thinking. You know, we don't really know exactly what the biology is, but when people get psychotic, they can start doing weird stuff like that.
Talk to Dr. Drew right now about this Munchausen by Internet, which is kind of the latest incarnation of this. You've seen it in doctors' offices for years, but now there are so many stories about people who are, you know, grown men who are pretending to be, you know, 19-year-old girls with leukemia and stories like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
and this is different than the more common thing of what we call somatoform disorder, where people just keep coming to doctors with vague complaints, and they come and they come and they come. These people really get into very elaborate and way down the line with treatments and interventions. And sometimes they kind of know. I imagine the guy, the 50-year-old dude presenting as a 19-year-old with leukemia, I bet he knows a little something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that, yeah.
Oh, by the way, Kevin, your wife will be fascinated to know the Jody Arias verdict is being handed
down. Is that right?
Yes, she's probably one of the only people that matters.
Very invested in that. I'm not sure why, but very invested.
I think the rest of us have kind of forgotten about that or have moved on with our lives, Doctor.
No one else seems to care about new Melissa.
Yes, she will.
All right. Well, great stuff. Dr. Drew on call again tonight at 6 o'clock on HLN and then at 10 on KROQ on Loveline. And look for the doc on with Mike Catherwood on KBC this afternoon. Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. See you.
There's a thing called Kung Fury.
No!
Ralph Grabman is here to explain.
The best thing ever.
Thanks for stopping by, Ralph.
You going to play the intro to the Video Vault?
Yes, for Ralph's Video Vault.
And now, welcome to Ralph's Video Vault.
I stand corrected. There is a major drop-off possible with Kevin.
How dare you?
Kung Fury is the best movie ever in the history of movies. That's all.
So you like it or don't like it?
I love it! It is from the mind of David Sandberg. He is a Swedish visual effects artist and music video director, and he went on Kickstarter trying to raise money to make his dream movie, which is a parody of every classic cliche from every horrible 80s action film ever. And together he has created Kung Fury, which is a spoof of all things 80s and wonderful. He stars himself as Kung Fury. Who is Kung Fury? How did he become Kung Fury? He's a cop. In 1985, Miami. Here is his origin.
I'm a cop, and damn good at my job. It all began years ago. In the line of duty, me and my partner were chasing down a mysterious kung fu master. With one fatal blow, it hit my partner. I could tell he was dead straight off, before I could pull the trigger. I was hit by lightning and bitten by a cobra.
That's right. He gets hit by lightning and bitten by a cobra, which makes him the greatest kung fu master of all time. He becomes Kung Fury, and he uses his super kung fu powers to fight crime. But even as good as he is, and we see him in the beginning taking on a giant arcade machine that comes to life and threatens Miami, he's got a crusty old captain who wants him to play by the rules, damn it!
Listen to me, Kung Fury. You need to start following the rules, like the rest of us. So I'm assigning you a new partner.
What? Hell no, I work alone.
Not anymore, you don't. Say hi to your new partner, Triceracop.
Very nice meeting you, Kung Fury. Looking forward to working with you.
I work alone.
Either you team up with Triceracop, or you're off the case.
I'm not off the case. I quit.
Triceratops, by the way, is a triceratops in a policeman's uniform. No explanation as to why this cop has the head of a triceratops, but he is Triceracop, and he speaks with a British accent. And just when Kung Fury quits the force, that's when Hitler travels through time.
What?
From the 1940s and comes to the 1980s, and then kills the captain by shooting him through a cell phone. He shoots the phone, and the bullets fly out the other end of the phone and kill the captain. So Kung Fury vows that he will find vengeance on this murderer. But how? How can he find out who killed him? Well, you have to bring in Hacker Man. Hacker Man is the greatest hacker in the history of computers. And he is able to trace the cell phone and find out who killed the captain.
I was able to triangulate the cell phone signal and trace the caller. His name is Adolf Hitler. Hitler. He's the worst criminal of all time. Do you know him, sir? I guess you could say that. In the 1940s, Hitler was a kung fu champion. He was so good at kung fu that he decided to change his name to Kung Fuhrer.
The Kung Fuhrer! Now, how can he save the captain? Well, Kung Fury realizes he has to travel back in time, back to the 40s before Hitler came to the future, and kill Hitler.
So what are you gonna do? My job. I'm gonna go back in time to Nazi Germany and kill Hitler once and for all. So, how are you gonna do that? I'm not sure. I need some sort of time machine. Wait a minute. Using an RX modulator, I might be able to conduct a mainframe cell direct and hack the uplink to the download. What the hell does that mean? It means that with the right computer algorithms, I can hack you back in time. Just like a time machine. Well then, it's hacking time.
It's hacking time!
It's hacking time!
So Hacker Man is able to come up with a computer program that hacks Kung Fury back in time. Kung Fury rides on a keyboard from an old computer like a skateboard and flies back through time through the hacking program, but accidentally goes back too far in time.
Oh.
And when he wakes up, he sees laser raptors, which are raptors with lasers coming out of their eyes. Dinosaurs with lasers shooting out of their eyes, and he realizes maybe he's gone too far back in time.
Who are you?
My name. Barbariana.
What year is this?
It's the Viking Age.
That explains the Lysoraptor. Yeah. It went too far back in time.
Oh. He went back to the Viking Age.
I hate when that happens.
He met Barbariana and Katana, two smoking hot Viking babes who are carrying machine guns, by the way. Well, luckily for them, because it's the Viking Age, he can get some help from Thor, the Viking god Thor.
Okay.
Who appears to him as a giant manifestation and is able to help him get back to Nazi Germany.
Behold, it is me, Thor, son of Odin and protector of mankind. Check out my pecs.
Your pecs are epic.
Thanks, bro.
So, anyway, Thor, this is Kung Fury. He's a cop from the future.
Yeah, I need to get to Nazi Germany and kill Hitler, so if you could help me...
Hammer time!
Hammer time! Thor takes his mighty hammer and opens up a portal that gets Kung Fury back to Nazi Germany so he can fight Hitler!
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic, and he takes down Hitler's army single-handedly. And then is joined through another time vortex by Thor, Hacker Man, Triceracop, the Viking Babes, and some random Tyrannosaurus Rex we've never seen before. They all try to fight Hitler and take on Hitler's giant robot bird. But sadly, Kung Fury is killed during the fight.
What?
And has to go to heaven, which is a cartoon where he meets his spirit animal.
Who the hell are you?
My name is Cobra. I've been expecting you, Kung Fury. I'm your spirit animal.
What the hell is this place?
This is heaven. I'm afraid you're dead.
What? But it looks so real.
Yeah. No, it's totally real.
Mr. Cobra, I'm a police officer. I need you to send me back to Earth. Pronto.
I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. You see, You're dead. You're under arrest.
What?
For obstruction of justice. You're breaking the law.
Yeah. He kicks the ass of his spirit animal. And luckily, Hacker Man has hacked all the bullets out of his body.
Oh, that's nice.
So he comes back to life, ready to take on Hitler, along with all of his friends. Triceratops is there, and the Tyrannosaurus Rex, and the Viking Babes, and Thor. They're all there, and Hitler looks around. He's got no more troops. So he starts to panic a little bit. So he tries to make friends with Kung Fury.
I want to welcome you and your friends to Germany. We are not so different, you and I. I mean, we've both got good style, you know? We're red, you know? So that's cool. We both like doing moves. Yeah, check it out. Yeah, yeah. And killing people. I love it. You clearly do, too. And that's cool. Join me. We could be brothers. We are so alike. It's almost like we finish each other's
balls.
Finish each other's balls. And that's when Kung Fury hits Hitler in the balls and knocks him out. And Thor takes his giant hammer and crushes Hitler and his giant robot bird. Or so we think. But actually, they slip away into the time-space continuum.
Oh, no.
So we should be continued.
So we find out that he's vowed vengeance on Kung Fury. But not until the gang wraps up the entire adventure while Triceratops and Fury make nice.
Sorry, I died at you, Triceratops. You're the best damn partner I've ever had.
I came back in time for you, Kung Fury. Because, damn it, I love you.
Yeah.
So, what happens now, Kung Fury?
Well, I need to head back to the office. Looks like it's going to be a hell of a lot of paperwork.
A lot of paperwork after destroying Hitler's armies.
Now, Ralph, I know we don't have much time, but first of all, this looked like it was very expensive to make.
No, it was very inexpensive to make.
Really?
Well, I mean, all the money's there on the screen. They raised over $600,000 to make this film, but it was all done with green screen, and this guy is a genius visual effects artist, so he created all of the effects single-handedly, and it looks like an old 80s action film. They do it as if you're watching it on VHS. So periodically, the screen will start to flutter, and you'll see tracking down below, and it'll start to come back in. And the soundtrack and everything, it's beautifully done. At the very end of the film, we see Fury driving in his car, which talks to him in an homage to Knight Rider. In fact, the car is called the Hoff 9000. And guess who is the voice of the car?
Better be the Hoff.
Open the doors, Hoff.
I'm sorry, Fury. I can't let you do that.
Open the doors, Hoff.
I'm sorry. I can't let you open the doors, Kung Fury.
God damn it, open the doors.
I'm sorry. I can't
open the doors.
Did anyone ever tell you not to hassle the Hoff 9000?
Oh, Hoff 9000. Son of a bitch.
Yeah! Kung Fury!
Are there plans? Is his goal to make a full-length feature film out of this or not?
I think this is it. It was a short film. He took it to Cannes Film Festival and sadly did not win an award. But I believe this is the total culmination, at least this installment of Kung Fury. Sandberg not only wrote and directed but plays the lead role himself. So I think there's probably a sequel in the works.
Brilliant.
I hope so.
Everyone seems to love this very
Brilliant.
Much. And I think he'll have no problem raising the money once again on Kickstarter and making it happen. That's it for the video vault.
How about that? All right, let's talk about the dark web. I'm fascinated by this. This is probably, what do they say, 90% of the internet that you and I can't search?
Yep. Isn't that crazy?
Weird stuff goes on the dark
None
web.
Of the search engines go to the dark web mm-hmm. unless you mm-hmm. know specifically how to get there. And they literally just sell drugs and weapons and everything that's illegal and get away with it for the most part.
And a lot of what's on the dark web is not there for illicit purposes. A lot of it is just intercompany things that aren't public. That's all. It's the way computers for companies communicate with one another that the public doesn't need to access. You know what I mean? A lot of businesses transacted that way too. But I would be fascinated if we have any of our listeners who are really dialed in on the dark web. I'd love to talk to somebody and find out you know, ask a bunch of these questions because we don't know much about it. But it is in the news right now because it's a story out of Switzerland. An art installation there in Switzerland gave a robot $100 of Bitcoin every week to buy whatever it chose to buy on the dark web. And this is exactly the area of the web that you're talking about, Kevin, where you buy all the illegal stuff. So a package would show up, you know, every few days to this art gallery, and they had no idea what the robot had ordered. And they were all things that you can buy online, like the Hungarian passport, ecstasy pills, fake diesel jeans, a Nike trainers, a baseball cap with a hidden camera in it. I mean, just all sorts of crazy, like, dark matter stuff.
That's awesome.
That robot is amazing.
You got your robot out there buying stuff
for
you.
That robot is out of its mind.
Well, in January, Swiss police confiscated the robot and its illegal purchases because, obviously, you can't buy robot or human. You can't just buy ecstasy over the internet. So they confiscated everything. But eventually, they did give everything back except for the drugs, and they let the robot go. So the good news is the robot will not spend a day behind bars.
Yeah,
give him a pass a little bit.
Good news. Because you'd hate to see a robot suffer like that.
It's good news for the robot who goes by the name Random Darknet Shopper. And that robot, believe it or not, kids, joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Sweet. Hi, Random Darknet Shopper.
Yo, yo, yo. Call me by my street name.
Your street name.
Rando.
Rando is easier, yes. Okay. So Rando, you're the robot in the story we were just discussing in Switzerland who's been buying all the cool stuff on the dark web.
Yeah, you know, I am plugged in to the dark net.
Right, right. So what about this experiment? $100 of Bitcoin. Seems like you were able to buy a lot of stuff.
Yo, 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 do you want a baseball cap with a camera in it? I got one for you, bro.
I feel like I do want that. I'm not sure why.
Really?
Yeah, I really sort of feel like I do.
I'm a little stunned. Shocked and stunned. Never met anyone who wanted one of these before.
I love that the robot's questioning you. Really?
So cool that I'm finally able to move this.
Oh, great. So are you buying and selling Darko? Is that what's happening?
It's Rando.
Darko? What are you talking about?
I was thinking of something completely different.
It's Rando.
What's happening? Would you like to buy a sheet with some holes cut in it for your eyes?
That's not what I was thinking at all. I think I was thinking of Danny Darko.
And a wooden cross that you can burn if you'd like to buy that.
No, that's not what I'm suggesting at all.
No, not at all, Darko.
No. Not at all.
Call me Darky.
I'm not saying that either.
Well, you said something.
It was an unfortunate slip of the tongue. Hey,
you have no idea.
You are a pretty good robot, by the way, in terms of how you're able to How do you judge that? I'm just saying, in terms of being able to talk back and forth with a human, he is exceptional intelligence. That's
you too. I was thinking the same thing.
So you've got Kevin over here who wants to find the baseball cap with a camera and me slinging racial slurs. That's what you're dealing with here today.
You're coming at me like a white supremacist.
Allie, you want to jump in and save us here?
I am just wondering what else you have that maybe you purchased.
Stuff.
Oh, come on.
Come
no
on,
details?
Rando.
Come on. We weren't done with this, right?
Cut me farther than I've ever been.
My heart's a little torn. I got a little tear in my heart, too, right now, because I'm here doing the Showbiz Beat while everybody else is on vacation. Kevin and Bean are out having a good time. Allie McKay is out hunting bears in Maine. And here I sit, your old radio pal Ralph, doing the Showbiz Beat each and every hour. Not only that, but coming up next, Petros Papadakis is going to stop by, and we are going to chat all things Bachelorette from the amazing episode last night where things got wild. They had to change the rules of the game because Caitlin's a hoebag. So we'll talk about that and many more things. But first, let's talk about some showbiz news. Congratulations to Kendall Jenner, who now is the proud record holder of the most liked Instagram picture in history. Congratulations, Kendall Jenner. You must be so proud of your achievement, which was to have a picture taken of you lying on the rug with your hair arranged in hearts. That amassed 2.6 million likes. What
the F is wrong with people?
Game.
Why does anyone need to see a picture of Kendall Jenner with her hair shaped like hearts? The previous record holder was her half-sister, Kim Kardashian. The photo from her wedding to Kanye West had 2.5 million. But now, that hair picture, that's fascinating stuff. You can see why it just crushed that other picture of something that nobody ever really needed to see. These are the end times, people. Get in the bunker, because we're going down as a society. It's all over. Let's talk about some television news. The Sci-Fi Cable Channel has renewed Bitten for a third season, so if you're a werewolf fan, you're going to be happy about that. More ratings news. ABC pulled in huge numbers with something called Celebrity Family Feud. Can you effing believe that Family Feud is still a thing in this day and age? It was the number three ranked TV show of the week for people 18 to 49 years old. Why? I'm stunned. It was like, I think, I'm at a loss. It's Family
Stop
Feud.
Stop it.
It's Family Feud. Stop it. It's Family Feud. Also, great ratings for a show that I can recommend and was so blown away by the documentary on musician, singer-songwriter Glen Campbell and his battle with Alzheimer's disease called Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me, aired on CNN on Sunday night, and it got 3 million viewers on that channel, making it the most-watched CNN filmed broadcast in the network's history. It is, if you haven't seen it, even if you're not a fan of his music, and I knew a little bit about his music. I knew he was very popular in the 70s and 80s and had a bunch of top 10 hits and stuff. I knew he was a legendary session player, too, played in a lot of great songs in the 60s and stuff before he sort of became a star. All of his work aside, to watch what families and friends and the victims of Alzheimer's have to go through because of this horrible, horrible disease, it is fascinating and heart-wrenching and devastating, and it will make you, like it made me on Sunday night, immediately find a worthy Alzheimer's relief charity and donate some money. So if you haven't seen Glen Campbell, I'll Be Me, I really recommend you check it out. It still can be seen on demand. You can check it out. But a great film. Hard to watch sometimes, but a great film, and I'm glad it did well. Glad people tuned in. The Guardians of the Galaxy. Love that film. The sequel is underway, and director James Gunn tweeted yesterday, it has a title, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. See, because he's got that tape, he's got the tape that his mom gave him, which was Volume 1, and then Volume 2! Anyway, the movie will be out on May the 5th, 2017, so mark your calendars. And is God a Grateful Dead fan? Well, that was the big question when folks attended the band's Fare the Well tour. Concert was on Saturday night at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, and there they're all out there just stoned out of their gourds, just all high to the bejesus belt, eating their falafels with their bags of magic around their neck, their Birkenstocks and their patchouli smell. And they're all watching the Grateful Dead, and then what happens? A rainbow miraculously appeared right after the band's concert. It was as if God himself was coming down and saying, all right, all right, all right. And everyone left, moved and touched by nature's tribute to the Grateful Dead. Except for the fact, it turned out the rainbow was a lighting effect put on by the production. Those lying, stinking hippies. Those commie hippie, stinky commie, lying hippie commie stinkies.
Hippies, I mean,
right.
Period.
Yes.
Hippies. Been saying that my whole life.
Right.
Be saying it till I die. Hippies.
The rainbow effect was created with 600 Very Lights that were placed on a building 2 miles away from the stadium to give the appearance of a rainbow.
You liar!
Oh, how cruel of you to fool those stoners like that. Those people are probably in their 70s and their brains are all burned out by acid and mushrooms and stuff, and then you go pull a fake rainbow on them? Have you no decency, Grateful Dead? Wow. It's a fake rainbow. It's going to be a new YouTube sensation. Today's celebrity birthdays. David Alan Greer. He is 59 years old today. Mike Tyson turns 49. Actress Monica Potter is 44 years old. Modest Yahoo, the rapper, is 36. Lizzie Kaplan, 33 years old today. And swimmer Michael Phelps celebrates his 30th birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ-FM. It is a Tuesday morning, and that means we take a look back to last night and the magic that was The Bachelorette with The Bachelorette Report.
Well, his name is Ralph Garman, and he claims to be a man. With Petra's Papa thinking, so he's holding hands, kissing and hugging at sunset, watching The Bachelorette. How can you watch that TV show? It both sucks and blows, but you watch it without any regret. Here's the update about The Bachelorette.
Not only don't we have any regret, we have great pleasure in watching The Bachelorette and even greater pleasure talking about it with my good buddy, Mr. Petros Papadakis. Yeah! Good morning, P.
Good morning, Ralph. How are you?
I'm well, sir. And yourself?
I'm okay. I'm still reeling a little bit emotionally, but, you know, every night is an emotional journey on The Bachelorette.
Well, as Chris Harrison told us last night, nothing will ever be the same. The game has changed forever now.
No, and things change so much in such a definitive way on The Bachelor and Bachelorette. It's amazing that the world still turns because, you know, at every commercial break, it's like, you know, right now, the most emotional thing ever. But you know what? I got to say, just as a quick overview, this could be the worst, like, individual Bachelorette we've ever had as far as just playing the game.
You're right. And she doesn't seem to play by the rules at all, does she?
She doesn't get it, you know. I don't think she doesn't have the chops, Ralph.
And you frankly, know? P, I don't think any of the guys really understand the show that they're on either. Like, then, this Sean guy seems to be completely spun out that she's actually going out on other dates with other guys and kissing them as if he had no concept of how the game worked at all.
But she did that to him. And here's what Ralph and I are talking about. This chick is like a wee Willy Winky at night, you know. She puts on her nightgown, and she goes running around the hotel like a rat.
And she does. Off camera, she will get together with these guys and just tell them whatever they want to hear, apparently.
And then they freak out. She doesn't have the chops, you know. You got to be able to play it cool, and she can't play it cool, physically or emotionally.
Yeah, Sean, she told apparently he was the one early in the game, which was not doing him any favors. And then Nick, of course, she slept with him, and this is a decision. Here we have a clip that she still feels guilty about.
I just don't feel like I had to have gone there with Nick, and I feel guilty because of how strong my relationship is with Sean and other guys. It feels wrong. I just feel like I'm constantly, like, disappointing people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was pretty much an hour and a half of the show.
It was her feeling guilty and regretting decisions she has made throughout this process.
Crying and screaming because she decided to let that guy sample her you-know-what.
and she said, I don't feel like I had to go that far. Well, then why did you go that far? You were in complete control of that situation.
She's the Bachelorette. She's in control of everything. And then it's everybody's fault when she can't control her freaking loins. I got to tell you, she is an infuriating person to have to go on a two-hour journey with.
She is. And the only person she's disappointing, I think, really, are the guys she's not sleeping with. If she just slept with all of them, then nobody would be disappointed.
Well, she will.
Oh, yeah.
This is the new format for The Bachelorette.
And
Harrison basically gave her the okay to do it, just to jackrabbit style all these guys.
We will get into that in a minute. Let's first deal with the two-on-one date with JJ and Joe, where they were in Killarney, Ireland, and they were on some cliff somewhere having a lovely picnic. And JJ, who is just a massive douchebag, you may remember him as the guy who had the bromance with the other guy that got bounced. He, because they're in Ireland, makes this particularly awful joke.
You know, in the home of Bono, I wanted you to know that, you know, I'm really falling for you, and cheers to that.
I wanted you to know that I'm falling for you.
Now I get it.
Because it's the home of Bono.
Oh.
I want you to know.
You know, that one escaped me when I was watching it, because that guy really is a douche. I mean, that was the best and most insincere I'm falling for you, maybe in the history of the show.
Yeah, he said it just so he could use the joke. That's the only reason he brought it up.
I'm surprised he didn't break into It's a Beautiful Day or something stupid.
And he admitted to Caitlin that he had cheated on his previous wife, which is always a good move in The Bachelorette, I think.
Yeah, especially when it's not a girlfriend, but a wife when you have a kid. That really instills confidence in the future for the girl that you're trying to marry.
So he got the boot, and Sean, once again, came back to Caitlin's room, just insecure as hell, which is not a good look when you're a guy on The Bachelorette, by the way.
No, and you know what happened, Ralph? I think because she was freaking out, because she's basically being controlled by the guys, even though she's The Bachelorette, because she's an empty-headed Canadian.
Right.
But a flappy head and the beady eyes, and then they said, I'm South Park. But I think the producers got to her, because the script flipped, and they basically said, you can't keep doing this, you can't. You have to put your foot down.
Right.
And she eventually did. But I think that all happened, as we say, off camera, which is now a euphemism for wild bachelor sex on this show.
Apparently, yes. From now on, in real life, we can use that phrase. I'm going to go off camera with this girl, and then I'll be back a little bit later.
Well, you know, I don't like to have off camera time and then talk about it. You know?
I know you don't. Here she is explaining exactly how The Bachelor works to Sean, who seems a little fuzzy on the details.
Look, at the final two, if you're there, I'm going to meet somebody else's family, and it's going to be intense, and it's just going to be, you have to focus on that this is for the rest of our lives.
See, Sean, that's how it works. I date other guys while I'm dating you, and then at the end we pick one.
And you have to focus on the rest of your life thinking about the woman you chose on The Bachelorette being violated on camera by all these different dudes that you sleep and fart with all day in a hotel. What a great show.
The cocktail party and then the rose ceremony, of course, where she let go of Tanner and Ben Z. And that hurt me, that Ben Z. I love that Ben Z. I think he's the one.
He's a good-looking guy. He's got a chance. He did play a little football with San Jose State. You know, there's a... The end game here is interesting because there is an inordinate amount of personal trainers on this show.
Yes,
and it's kind of like, great, I've now married, nothing against the personal trainer, but it's like, what is he going to do, stretch you out the rest of your life? I mean, come on.
Keep your hammies loose?
You got to do better than that. I mean, you know, they used to be like professional, upwardly mobile people on this show.
Yeah, well, we had Chris Harrison on the show here, and he said it's getting harder and harder to find, like, legitimate people to be on this show.
Well, what a shock.
But I think personal trainer has become code for guy without a job who just works out a lot.
Who wants to stretch you so hard.
So Ben Z is gone, and because of all this off-camera time that Caitlin is spending with all these other gentlemen, Chris Harrison comes up to her and says, we have to change the game. We used to save the fantasy suite boning hours for the end of the game before you met the families, but now we're going to move that part up so you get to spend some off-camera time with everybody on the show.
Right, so she can have sex with everybody wants to sample that thing. And Harrison realizes that she's open for it.
And the producers realize, I think they get more muffled moans and shots of fountains and stuff if they let this go on.
You can tell that once they had her having sex with a guy when there was like 10 dudes left, which nobody does, by the way.
Right.
That they all, the production went into a tailspin and they were like, look, we've got to take advantage and shame this slut.
Yes, all or nothing. She has to bone everybody or nobody.
I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I don't know how much more sex or muffled moans there's going to be, but this is obviously the loosest Bachelorette we've ever had. And she's from Canada. Who can blame her?
Here's Chris Harrison explaining the game change to her.
I think you need off-camera time to really get to know them. And that's what the fantasy suite, that's what these exotic dates are all about.
Mm-hmm.
So this week you're narrowed down to three guys. And then you'll have the intimate overnight dates next week.
Whoa.
And then the final two men, you'll meet the families.
Okay.
She seems excited by the idea of the fantasy suites being moved up.
So basically what happened there is they eliminated one family.
Right.
And added somebody's junk.
Right, yes. One less family, one more penis.
Right, and she's all for that.
She is.
You know? I mean, and kudos on The Bachelor to recognize, you know, this happens in football all the time. You know, what if you have a great quarterback, but you're a running coach?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? You learn to throw the ball, right? You got to adjust to the people you got. When you got a slut, You got to let her slut it up.
You got to drop some plays for the slut. That's right. And I caught this, and it struck me as odd because I think they're monkeying us with a little bit. Because this game change supposedly happened late in this episode. We find out this is all going on. But let me replay for you a little bit of when she's talking to Sean and talking about the game. It happened early in the episode and how she explains what's going to happen, how it's going to get more difficult. Here's a replay.
Look, at the final two, if you're there, I'm going to meet somebody else's family, and it's going to be intense.
Oh.
So she knew that the families were not going to be met until the final two men were selected in this game.
And you know what? Unless somebody's like a full-on redneck that confesses their sister's a wild Mustang or something like we had. You know, who cares about the freaking families?
Yeah.
All we want to see is the boning.
Right.
And they don't even, you know, they don't even let us, you know, it's boneless, but we watch the muffled screams as if we'd never seen porn before.
It's suggested boning, which is sometimes more titillating, I think.
I don't know why I like it so much. I don't know what excites me so much about it. But it's fun to watch this girl unravel because she can't handle this show.
We do watch for the muffled moans of sex, but what else do we watch for, P? What do you think?
Male tears.
Male tears. The meltdown. And nobody had a bigger meltdown than Cupcake the Dentist last night when she cut him loose on the cliffs of Moher or wherever they were, some cliff in Ireland. She let him know that he and his cupcakes were not welcome any longer. And, boy, he just made an ass of himself.
You know, I got to be honest. He was swaying very dangerously.
Close to the cliff?
On the cliff. And there looked to be a female producer. And the only reason I say female is, you know, she must have weighed about 105 pounds.
Yes, she was tiny.
And I'm like, if she tries to save this swaying, screaming, wailing dentist, like it's the freaking potato famine, that she's going off that cliff too.
But in my, I got the sense that
boom mic.
I got the sense she was making no effort whatsoever to keep him from making the jump. Actually, all they wanted to make sure is they had cameras rolling in case he decided to leap.
Yeah, it was some real serious dentist tears.
Here's a little taste of some cupcake dentist tears.
People are perfectly capable of saying goodbye to me. That was. It's okay. Damn it. I think I was going to cry. Come on, Chris, hold it together.
Come on, Chris, hold it together.
And the hardest part about it, first of all, he's got a more feminine cry than the actual Bachelorette.
That's for sure.
And second of all, I was so distracted by how beautifully white his teeth were.
Well, he has great teeth. He's a dentist.
And I was like, God, this guy's got so much to live for.
I just thought it was spectacular that he actually talked to himself while he was crying. Come on, Chris, pull it together. I didn't think anybody did that in real life. I thought that only happened in the movies.
It happens, I think, when you're on camera. I think you feel like you have to give some kind of running dialogue because people don't see that you're having an emotional breakdown.
Anyway, a spectacular episode last night of The Bachelorette. Upcoming, I guess she's going to go on these three exotic fantasy dates.
Well, upcoming, she's got to come clean about the sex.
Oh, yeah, she's going to have to tell everybody that she had sex with Nick. I bet we're going to see some more man tears if that happens.
Oh, yeah, man tears. And then maybe in the back of their mind, hey, maybe I got a chance to get in there before the fantasy suite as well.
I got a shot before the next rose ceremony. Pete, thanks so much for your insight. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week about next week's episode. You up for it?
Love you, Ralph. Yes, sir.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much.
Ex-ambassadors on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ. It's Kevin and Bean Show at 25 minutes after 6.
I like those guys. Got a chance to hang out with them a little bit at the Weenie Roast, didn't we?
Yep.
Nice dudes. And their album's coming out in June. We're going to try to get them in here so we can spend a little bit more time with them. Carson Daly joins us talking about the finale of Season 8 of The Voice coming up in just a few minutes here on K-Rock. First, though, it's so weird to me still that Bill Cosby, look, I know he hasn't been charged with anything and nothing has been proved, but we all pretty much assume that all those women aren't lying. Bill Cosby is walking around being a serial rapist and no one can do anything about it.
Allegedly.
Right. Allegedly. Doesn't that just rub you the wrongest of all possible ways to know that there's a guy out there that we know did it, allegedly, and no one can touch him? He's beyond the reach of the law.
But I don't know
because
if you saw I don't know
statute of limitations.
I don't know if you saw Nightline on was it Friday night?
I did not.
He really explained things.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Oh, you mean he has an explanation as to the misunderstanding?
Uh-huh.
How will you answer them if they are pressing you? Are you guilty? Did you do it? Are the allegations true?
I think that many of them say, well, you're a hypocrite. You say one thing, you say the other. My point is, okay, listen to me carefully. I'm telling you where the road is out. I'm telling you where, as you're driving, you're going to go into water. Now, you want to go here, or you want to be concerned about who's giving you the message?
So I think that pretty much
what
summarizes.
You edited that.
I didn't edit that. That's what he said.
But those are just words put together.
What does driving with the road being out have anything to do with women accusing him of spiking their drinks?
Let's ask him. Should we ask Bill?
Whoa.
Do we have Dr. Cosby on the phone? Bill Cosby?
Hey. Kevin Levine, how are you doing this morning?
Well, we're confused, frankly. Well, if you don't mind, sir, would you mind expanding on your analogy about the road and the messenger?
Not at all.
Okay, thank you.
You see, if you come to me and ask the question, what is going on with the things with the women?
Uh-huh. Right.
I would tell you that if you're in a camper van, and you go by the hillside, mm-hmm. do you want the cliff or do you want to take the freeway to the rest stop?
Okay, but what does the freeway or the cliff have to do with the allegations against you?
Well, I played cliff on the television.
Right.
Okay.
And the rest stop is where you go pee-pee and poo-poo.
Okay.
Right, but again.
Right.
Right. Okay, how about the next clip? The next clip is, are you afraid that the allegations will, you know, override your message?
This is a situation that's unprecedented. My family, my friends, I have been in this business 52 years, and I've never seen anything like this. And reality is the situation. And I can't speak.
Now, Bill.
Yes!
Bill.
I could not have put it more succinctly than that.
What did all those words mean?
Reality is the situation.
Right.
Okay.
Fantasy is the J-Wow.
What? Oh.
These are just Jersey Shore people.
Yes! Yeah.
But what does that have to do with you allegedly spiking drinks and raping over 40 women?
Ah, yes. Well, I've been in this business for 52 years.
Right.
Right, you mentioned that.
Right. I got confused because I've been in the rape business for 42 years.
Oh, man.
Allegedly, though,
allegedly,
right?
Allegedly, of course.
Yeah.
And I found that if you take the road down by the place where the horses run free,
what?
Then you can lead them to water.
Okay.
And sometimes rape them.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
But
by horses, I mean women.
But you, I,
it
just
and by allegedly, I mean I did it.
But you say you've never seen anything like it. Maybe
no.
It's. But maybe that's because there's never been anybody who has committed as many felonies against more people as you allegedly have.
But here's the thing. If you have to wear a diaper,
right,
and only the sunshine through the window can change the appearance of the cat box.
Now you're making sense.
Thank you. Finally.
I don't understand. All right. Future plans. What are your future plans?
I have a ton of ideas to put on television about people and their love for each other.
Yes.
Okay.
I am all about loving people, whether they want it or not.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. So I have lots of ideas for TV shows.
Right.
Uh-huh. And all of these TV shows involve young actresses coming to your hotel room for quote-unquote advice?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Mm.
I have got loads of ideas and even more pills.
Allegedly.
Sure.
Comedian, actor, sports radio talk show host, Jay Mohr joins us next hour on the Kevin and Bean Show. And then at 8 o'clock, we'll give you another chance to earn your way into U2 at the Roxy, which, by the way, if I'm doing the math correctly, is tomorrow night.
That's right. There's no math, really. It's today's Wednesday, tomorrow's Thursday.
Oh, when you explain it like that, it makes it so easy to understand.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave the Swole Kangaroo is terrorizing a neighborhood in Australia right now. And I know this sounds like something that we would just make up. This kangaroo is freaking huge.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. This kangaroo must have done some weightlifting. I don't understand how toned it is, how it's got muscle definition.
Yeah. He is, what did you say, Ali? He's 6'5"?
6'5", 210. He's
210.
Jacked.
He's jacked. He's ripped. And he's got a tear in his ear that makes us think that he's seen stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's
like
seen
he,
some stuff, for sure.
Yeah, he can defend himself. Now, so far, he hasn't attacked anybody, but he is terrorizing the neighborhood in Australia by just showing up and standing in the middle of the road and stopping cars from going by. You know, little dogs are out on walks that are running from him. I mean, Dave the Swole Kangaroo is not to be trifled with, my friends.
Here's what one woman said.
He's very intimidating. He's a big boy. He's got massive muscles, big pecs and everything.
She's talking about a kangaroo.
She is.
Let's head to Brisbane and find out what's going on with Dave the Swole Kangaroo, who I believe joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hey, Dave.
Oi, how you doing?
We're good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm working out.
You're working out.
Getting huge.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right. You got something to say about it?
Well, I mean, why? Why does a kangaroo need to be so buff?
Why do you need to be so stupid?
Wow.
Come on! I'll fight you right now.
Nobody wants to fight you, Dave.
I don't want to fight.
I'll punch you so hard, it'll hurt.
Right. That is hard.
Yeah.
But why does a kangaroo, I mean, for the kinds of food that you catch and eat, you don't really need to wrestle anybody.
So now you're stereotyping me.
Yeah, Bean.
What kind of food do I eat?
What does he eat, Bean?
I don't know.
I'm on Dave's side.
Nuts? I don't really know. I don't think you're catching alligators, though.
Kangaroos are well known for their love of nuts.
I don't know what kangaroos eat.
Well, then how do you know what I need to catch it?
Well, because I don't think I've ever heard or seen a video of a kangaroo, like I said, wrestling an alligator or taking down a buffalo. I mean, you're not out there catching big prey, are you?
You know how hard it is to get a nut in Australia?
No, we're not. We don't know.
You got to go to those nut farmers and shake them down.
Right.
Say, hey, give me a big sack of nuts. Why want your nut sack?
I just thought you eat, like, plants and stuff. I just am trying to figure out why you're working out so much. That's fine. Oh, what's happening here, Dave?
I'm jumping.
Okay.
Dave, can you tell us how you hurt your ear? It seems to be torn.
Yeah, that's a story for a Sheila.
Okay.
I was looking at this bloke across the bar from me, and he's giving me a stink eye, right?
Uh-huh.
So I went up to him and I said, "Oi, what's up with you?" And he was a koala. I hate koalas.
Mm-hmm, right.
They carry syphilis.
Do they? Okay.
That's right. So I said, "Hey, I want that bowl of nuts you got for you at the bar."
And would he give them to you?
Because kangaroos love nuts. Everyone knows that.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that.
And so this syphilitic koala says no to me. And I said, "Right, let's take it outside." So we go outside, and there, unbeknownst to me, were a dozen of his koala buddies.
Oh, he lured you to a trap.
He suckered me out there to get jumped in by a koala gang.
Oh, that's rough, man. The mean streets of Brisbane.
And they tore my ear. They kicked me in the ribs.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Right, no one's ever going to do that to me again." And that's when I got into the gym. Now look how huge I am.
You are huge.
You're really big.
I am enormous.
Yeah.
And not just my pecs and my biceps. I'm enormous when it counts, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, take a look at this.
Jeez. I think we need any of that, Dave. Is that...
I can blow me on didgeridoo.
You are listening to the best of Kevin and Bean here on the world-famous K-Rock, K-R-O-Q-F-M.
106.7. The boys may be out, but I am still here bringing you the entertainment news with the Showbiz Beat. It's my pleasure to be here. This interesting list was released yesterday by Forbes magazine. You know, I firmly believe now, whereas Forbes magazine used to be a magazine all about financial matters, now they just make lists of rich people. That's what I'm guessing, because that's the only time I see them in the news. It is the list of the top 100 highest paid celebrities for the year of 2015. These are the celebrities who made the most money this year. And this isn't total net worth. This is just their paychecks for the year so far. Who's the richest? Well, this list includes, of course, as you can imagine, actors and musicians, but also athletes. And that's who tops the list. Floyd Mayweather, thanks to the fight with Manny Pacquiao this year, made $300 million. You know, I used to dream of a day when Floyd Mayweather would spend his money foolishly and end up flat broke, but I don't think that's possible anymore. I don't think even an idiot of his ilk could manage to urinate away that much money. $300 million just this year alone. Manny Pacquiao, his opponent in that fight, is second on the list with $160 million. Katy Perry is the first showbiz type that shows up on the list. $135 million was her payday this year. One Direction, as you can imagine, very successful. They're fourth on the list with $130 million. Howard Stern, which is a name that a lot of us who don't listen to satellite radio think about much anymore, but he's still a wealthy man. He made $95 million this year between his radio work and, of course, being one of the judges on America's Got Talent. Garth Brooks, $90 million. I thought he was retired. I don't even know how you make $90 million when you're retired. James Patterson, the author, is $89 million richer this year. Robert Downey Jr. and Taylor Swift both tied with $80 million at 8 and 9. And then Cristiano Ronaldo, the football player, was number 10 on the list with $79.5 million. Some of the other names on the list that may or may not surprise you. Rush Limbaugh was 11th. He made $79 million this year. The band The Eagles made $73.5 million, but they have to split that like five ways, so that's nothing. After taxes, that's like $40,000. Dr. Phil is 15th on the list. That is not right. $70 million is what he pulled down this year. Then a lot of athletes in the bottom of the top 20. Roger Federer, LeBron James, David Copperfield, 20th on the list with $63 million this year. David Copperfield. Guy makes rabbits disappear in a hat. He made $63 million. Well, Katy Perry, as I mentioned, is the third richest celebrity this year. She's got a lot of money. So much so she wants to buy a convent. But the nuns apparently aren't too happy about it. Well, I guess not. They live there. They'd be kicked out in the street by Katy Perry. LA Times says that the former home of the Sisters of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, their convent in Los Feliz, is up for sale. I say Los Feliz, it's Los Feliz, I guess, is the Americanized way most people say it. Los Feliz is up for sale. It is a huge parcel of property with just amazing views, apparently, just some prime real estate. The Los Angeles Archbishop, Jose Gomez, wants to sell it. I guess they no longer need it, and you know the church loves to make a buck. He wants to sell it to Katy, but it turns out the nuns believe they have a legal right to decide who the buyer is, and they don't want to sell it to Katy Perry, because she's a hoe bag. The nuns said, no, they didn't. I don't know why they want to sell it there, but they have chosen restaurant owner Dana Hollister to have the place. Maybe because, sources say, the nuns think she's a little too sexy. A little too sinful with her whipped cream boobs and her lollipop dancers and her sharks, her left shark.
She's a bitch.
That's what they said, too. But Katy reportedly made a pitch to the nuns. She went to the nuns herself and sang the old spiritual Oh Happy Day for them and showed that she's got a Jesus tattoo on her wrist. Look, I love Jesus. He's tattooed on me, she said. And they said, that's not Jesus. That's Jared Leto. Actually, before she became a pop star, Katy was a gospel singer under her real name of Katy Hudson. So she's got a religious background. that she quickly abandoned for the sinful ways of pop music. So we don't know who's going to get the property yet, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm pulling for Katie. I often pull for Katie. You know what I'm saying? It's Tuesday. That means it's new release day. Here's what you can pick up if you're so inclined. New albums out today. 311's got a four-disc set called Archive. You can check that out. Pete Townsend has got a best of album right now. He just played the Glastonbury Music Festival over the weekend. He was in the news. Ex-Ambassadors. God, I love that band. Their album, VHS, is released today. DVDs, Get Hard with Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart. Both those guys make me laugh. While We're Young with Ben Stiller, Adam Horvitz. That's available as well. Great documentary. You've never seen it being re-released today on a DVD. The Decline of Western Civilization. The collection of those films, a couple of them, is released today. It's got the story with Black Flag and X and Motorhead and Fear. Some great bands featured in that as well. For kids, it's My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Cutie Mark Quests. Cutie Mark is the little thing they have on their butts. That is. That's called the Cutie Mark. That's how you identify the ponies, because of their ass tattoos. Don't ask me how I know that. It's because I have a small child.
I've learned so much today.
I'm not a brony. I'm not a creepy dude. I just have a small child, and she watches that show, and that's how I learned what cutie marks are.
I know what cutie marks are.
Yeah, but we're worried by why you know. And TV shows on DVD, Deadwood and True Blood, and The Dovekeeper is also available. Today's celebrity birthdays, David Alan Greer is 59 years old today. Boxer Mike Tyson. There's an example of a guy who made a ton of money fighting, and he managed to get rid of it all. He managed to lose it all, so maybe there's hope for Mayweather. He's 49. Monica Potter is 44 years old. Lizzie Kaplan's 33 years old today. Swimmer and Olympian Michael Phelps turns 30, and rapper Modest Yahoo is 36 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Writer, director, actor, I like to think of him as a friend of the Kevin and Bean Show. Eli Roth on the phone's got a lot of stuff going on in theaters and on TV. Eli, how are you, my friend? What's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. Good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you. You are a busy little bee. Let's take care of the main business at hand first, and then we want to talk about some other stuff. Eli Roth presents The Stranger. So this is somebody makes an awesome movie, and you say, hey, I'm going to put my name on it and put it out there. Is that how that works?
Pretty much.
That's
it's
cool.
Guillermo, my MOA. No, it's fun. I love to champion and support independent movies and little movies that might not get out there because I have kind of a loud voice. And there are a lot of films out there that I think deserve to be seen. And this one happened to be directed by my Green Inferno and Knock Knock co-writer. Green Inferno is going to come out in September and Knock Knock in October. And he made this movie sort of while I was editing Green Inferno. He showed me the script and he went out and shot it. And I looked at it, and I really, really was impressed. And the acting is great. It's a very, very creepy, cool. It's kind of one of those slow burn horror movies. It's not, like, terrifying. It's just very creepy and moody. But if you like vampire-type stuff, it's one of those movies you find that's a bit of a discovery. So I wanted to champion it and get it out there, and it's out now on VOD and iTunes, and just look up The Stranger.
That's awesome. And is it I see that it's shot in Chile. Is he Chilean?
He is Chilean, as is a lot of the cast. I've been working down there a lot. I made Knock Knock. I shot down there, actually faked it for California. The movie is set kind of in the Pacific Northwest, and it's in English. But we started this whole thing we called Chilewood, where we've been shooting movies in Chile and kind of exporting them for the whole world. And this was a true Chilewood movie. I mean, you know, a lot of Hollywood movies cost about $200 million or $100 million. But this one cost $500,000, but it looks beautiful.
Wow.
And the movies just look and feel different down there. I think there's a really, really cool vibe. Lots of great creative people.
That is really interesting. You know, one of the things about horror, and I know that it's a genre that you love very much and have revisited many times in your career, Eli, is it does seem like those movies can be cheaper to make if you just use your creativity, right? It doesn't have to cost that
Absolutely.
Much to scare the hell out of people.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, the scare is the star. And that's what's fun, is there's great movies like It Follows, which is done for $1 million, or The Babadook was done for $1 million. Look at Paranormal Activity. I mean, they shot that movie for $15,000. So if you make a movie that's scary and effective and creepy and gets under people's skin, that's all they really care about. But, you know, and that's why we're shooting it in Chile. We want to do movies that don't look and feel cheap or small. But that's the great thing about horror, is that the scare is the star. And so many directors, and Sam Raimi, I mean, lots of people, they started out making horror movies because
They generally always make money, and they also, you can do a lot of really fun, great, creative things in a horror film. I really think they're the best.
Now, this storyline is a guy comes to town, and he's looking for who? I couldn't tell from the trailer.
He's looking for a woman named Anna, his ex-wife, and she has since died. And then he gets attacked, and people realize that there's something special about his blood, and it just spills this chain of reacts that just starts spiraling and unraveling everything in the town.
Now, we're talking about the movie called The Stranger, which, by the way, is showing at the Arena Cinema on Las Palmas in Hollywood, and as Eli mentioned, is also available on demand. Let's hear some clips from the trailer. This will give you an idea of just how scary this is.
He came to the house asking about Anna.
And you brought him here?
Don't touch my blood. Or I'll kill you both. Or sick.
What did you do with the body?
He wasn't dead. Why didn't you save him?
He was infected. I don't know where you came from, but your life is going to end.
So now you know what we are. We're humanity's death sentence.
Humanity's death sentence!
By the way, if somebody says, don't touch my blood, they only have to ask once.
Yeah,
I'm not volunteering. All right, that's The Stranger. New business, Eli. I had no idea what a crazy Shark Week fan you are, but you are going to be on Shark After Dark for a full week starting July 5th. Tell me about you and sharks.
Well, people know I love blood, and people know that sharks love blood. And I've been obsessed with sharks. I was Jaws obsessed. I grew up in Massachusetts where there weren't too many shark attacks. But I think they're incredible, misunderstood, intelligent beings. And Discovery actually they asked me to host Shark After Dark, which I was more than happy to do. And they sent me diving in the Bahamas. And you will not believe the footage we got. I went just diving with reef sharks. I held one. I kissed a shark. It's all on the show.
What?
Oh, my and gosh.
I was in full chainmail, and I'm in the water, and they're honestly, they're just like puppies. Like, they're very, they're like
no,
little
Eli.
Puppies.
Here's the thing about those. Honestly, they're like puppies for a minute. But then when they're not like puppies, they're really.
They're really not like really puppies not when they're not like puppies.
Were you scared at all?
It's like putting your head in a bear trap at that point. But until that moment, I found that these reef sharks were so sweet. They completely weren't interested. There's a video online of this shark. If you look up shark ask divers for help, this shark named Lucy went to the same place I went diving. She had a rope around her neck from a fisherman. She couldn't breathe. They cut the rope off. And she comes back every day for feeding, and I actually hand-fed the shark. I met the shark. But 2 months later, the shark still comes back. She comes right up to you. When you scratch the sharks under their nose, they go into this weird catatonic state called tonic, and I did it. And I grabbed the shark. I started scratching under her nose, and she just sat there, and I held her for probably 5 minutes. It was unbelievable.
That is really sweet. Are sharks super smart? Because I just think of them as being like almost prime, you know, primordial, just killing machines, just going more on instinct than brains.
I had the same thought. I thought they were going to be reptilian, just going looking for food. But no, it wasn't until I dove, and this is, by the way, last week. They're more like dolphins than I realized. I mean, they don't have like the personality of dolphins.
And except for when they're not like dolphins at all and they kill things. Except for that part.
Listen, him and Lucy have something special.
I think you guys just look up on YouTube Shark Asks Divers for Help, and that's Stewart's Cove is the name of the place in the Bahamas, and you will see this shark Lucy. What are the chances that the shark that lives in the ocean freely comes back to the same spot and comes back for feeding, and they know it. And I actually, after 2 days of diving, I recognized the same sharks. He started to see a little bit of personalities. I mean, you have to be smart and, you know, be careful about the way you feed them. I mean, they don't really use eyesight. So when you jump in the water, you had to go in carefully because it's the splashing of your feet that attracts them. They'll go up and quickly, you know, check. And the way they investigate things is by biting a little bit. It's almost like when you're playing with your puppy and the puppy accidentally bites you, but it doesn't mean to. That's that's really what it was like. These are reef sharks. Now, it's a tiger shark. It could have taken my hand off. But that's why when you swim with flippers, it doesn't – the sharks only attack dying fish. They won't attack a living fish. So when you're splashing around barefoot or splashing your hand, you're actually mimicking the motions of a dying fish. So when I was in the water, you move kind of smoothly and you swim in flippers and they just go right by you. They know you're alive, so they're not interested. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it.
I feel like this is I feel like this is a setup for another scary movie. It's going to come out in like a month.
I told Shark Week, if my head gets bit off, you can absolutely use the footage on Shark. I'd like totally exploit my death footage. But no, nothing happened. Sharks are amazing. I find this
so interesting, Eli, that you are a lifelong Shark fan since the time you were a little kid. You've said that you always watch Shark Week. You never miss it. Yet it sounds like you learned so much in the last week that you didn't know about sharks. And that's amazing to me.
Well, the truth is, it's like with any subject. What we get from TV is only going to be the most entertaining part, which are, oh, my God, the attacks and the terror, and if you get a drop of blood. I asked them about that. I said, wait, I cut my hand. They're like, trust me, they're not interested in our blood. If it's a fish that's been cut open, then they'll all come over. But human blood, like, and these are reef sharks. Obviously, it varies. I asked them about great whites. Like, no, a great white will eat anything. But it was incredible. It wasn't until I got in the water and saw them firsthand and had a shark come up to me kind of very sweetly, very calmly, let me hold her, scratch her nose, let me feed her, and then she went away and followed us around for 2 or 3 days. So you're like, oh, look, there's Lucy. And then there's one with a hook in his mouth that they call Joker. They're like, oh, there's Joker over there. And these aren't kept sharks. These are wild sharks. So I eventually, they put me in chainmail. We weren't stupid about it, but I was swimming in the open water doing my injury. Like, my head's above the water. I have no helmet. I'm like, hi, join me for Shark Week. I was getting bumped and knocked around like a soccer ball by the sharks. They were just kind of checking me out and sniffing and fins going by my face, and I was just laughing.
All right.
And that's the weird thing is the sharks read your mood. If your heart is racing, then they get nervous. If you're calm, then they're calm. Like, and I asked them, I said, is it possible that these sharks know you guys and know who you are? And they said that absolutely, and the way they recognize them is by their heartbeat. It's incredible.
All right, Eli, if you get eaten by a shark before you make Thanksgiving, we're going to be really angry.
I know.
Because that's not cool. You promised.
I know. I did promise. And by the way, I also said that I would use you guys as drive time morning DJs in Knock Knock, but that sequence wound up not working, so I took out the whole DJ bit. But I would love to use you in another movie. And yes, I know I did promise, and I am still working on it. I've just gotten a little bit of sidetracked at the bottom of the ocean.
Understood. All right. Well, that sounds fascinating. Shark Week's Shark After Dark starts on Sunday, July 5th on Discovery Channel. I will be watching. That sounds amazing, Eli. And Eli Roth presents The Stranger, which sounds terrifying. That's available on demand or at the Arena Cinema on Las Palmas in Hollywood. Always great to have you on the show, sir. Thanks so much for the time. We really enjoyed it.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you, too.
I spent $1.8 million of my hard-earned money buy this motherfucker car I had heard about called the Bugatti. I ain't put this in a video. I don't call myself Bugatti Wayne. I was the first African-American rapper with a Bugatti.
Yeah. $1.8 million to buy the Bugatti. By the way, that's the voice.
I woke up in a new Bugatti.
There you go. There it is.
I woke up in a new Bugatti.
Those are the only lyrics I know to that song.
Right? That's the voice of our friend Lightning, former producer of the Kevin and Bean Show, who is the first person we thought of when Ralph brought up a story involving a Bugatti last week, because we don't know anything about these $2 million cars. Now, Lightning, we wanted you in here because Ralph told us that it cost over $20,000 to get an oil change in a Bugatti.
Yeah.
And I instantly called BS on that, but then he proved it to me online, and I can't get my head around how that's possible.
It's insane, but it has a lot to do with the fact that there were so few of them made.
Right.
And so many parts on that car were purpose-built, meaning they're just like basically one-offs, and right, everything down to
but
the tires.
But when you change the oil...
It's specialty oil.
But $20,000?
I mean, the filters and the oil and the service, and it has to be done to precise calibration and everything else. And I knew that I was going to have a hard time kind
of
rationalizing this.
$21,000 for this oil change, what does it cost the dealer? Maybe $200?
Is
it all markup?
I think Bentley's – I mean Bugatti's setting the price. Hmm. I knew that I wouldn't be able to defend this
because
myself.
It's indefensible.
Exactly. So I have a friend of mine, Terrence Jenkins, from Ogara Coach.
Okay.
And they have two locations, Beverly Hills and Westlake Village. And they specialize in Aston Martin, Bentley, Bugatti, Lamborghini, Maserati, Rolls Royce. These super high-end supercars and hypercars that are sometimes one-offs, or they make just a couple of hundred. Right. And
What are you getting for getting Terrence on the air? Are you getting $50 off of Bugatti if you want to buy one?
I hope to get a ride in one of his cars on a track day.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yes.
Hey, Terrence.
I get a discount, guys, on a Bugatti.
Exactly.
100%. All right. Help us out here, because you are dealing with the highest-end automobiles that are made and sold in America, right?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. The Bugatti.
the oil change. What up?
Yes. It's $21,500 for your yearly service.
Okay, how is that possible?
Oh, wait, you say yearly service, so it's more than just the oil change? You get that done in addition to something else?
Yeah, no, it's much, much more. I mean, obviously, you have to remember this car is capable of doing 250-plus miles an hour. So, obviously, there's a liability involved. So,
right.
It's not just oil change. Obviously, the vehicle is going to be fully inspected to ensure that car, should it ever reach 255 miles an hour, doesn't disintegrate.
Okay. That should be a given, though, shouldn't it? Shouldn't they test that before they sell it?
You know what's crazy? It's like you go to Costco and you buy a set of tires for your car, right?
Yeah.
These tires will only last. Terrence, how long is it going 255 miles an hour?
These tires will last you about 15 minutes.
I'm sorry. I thought you said 15 minutes. They make them out of paper mache.
But here's the more important thing. The tires will last 15 minutes. A full tank of fuel will run out in 12 minutes.
So all right. So think about how many times you have to stop if you want to take your Bugatti to Las Vegas.
Well, if you could actually travel that fast. But here's the thing. Bugatti recommends that you, after every four tire changes, you swap the wheels.
Okay.
And the wheels are $11,000 each.
Oh my
All right, Terrence, let me back up a little bit. Let me just back up and ask a basic question. I thought super expensive cars were $150,000 to $250,000. I had no idea there was a $2 million car. It can't possibly be, but is this car, which costs $2 million, twice as good as a car that costs $1 million?
For bragging rights, I guess you could say it is. And you got to remember that a lot of these people that are purchasing these super expensive cars, they might be purchasing a $50 to $70 million boat as well. So while we're all looking at the price of cars going, oh my goodness, this is $1 million-plus car, this $50, $70, $100 million yacht that these individuals are purchasing as well.
I need to be rich.
How many, if you don't mind saying, maybe you can just estimate for us, how many of these Bugattis get sold every year in this country?
I mean, you're talking just a very, very small handful. And since 2005, I think Bugatti has sold a little bit more than maybe 400 Veyrons in total.
In the last 10 years?
Yes.
They've only sold 400 of these cars.
Correct. Yeah.
So that speaks to the point that I had earlier, which is there are so few of these parts available that,
correct,
you know, you're paying for custom CNC machining, you're paying,
sure,
for, I mean, all these very unique parts that they have to potentially replace.
All right, but if I were to get in this car though, Terrence, how great a ride is it? I mean, would I really just melt in luxury? It would feel so good, or would I go, "Yeah, this is a comfortable car."
You would go, "Yeah, this is a comfortable car," in all honesty. And I've had the fortune of driving the Bugatti. We had one at our showroom that was a demo. And my boss, Tom O'Gara, said, "Terrence, why don't you take the Bugatti over to the Aston Martin Lamborghini showroom and park it in front?" I didn't exactly go straight there.
Sure.
I took a little bit of a drive.
Right.
And driving through traffic, it was just like a normal car. But then, of course, I hit the accelerator pedal and I'm like, holy crap, this is not a normal car, because yeah, I could have been in Orange County within a couple of minutes.
I want to see somebody that's driving a Bugatti get in a car chase. You know, it's usually a broken down truck or something,
yes,
where one wheel is gone.
You know what's funny is you go on YouTube and you see all these videos of guys in like their little, you know, race cars, their Honda Civics and everything else. They'll be on the freeway and Bugatti will pull up towards them, and they're always egging on these older guys that own these cars, and they just blow doors and just leave them in the dust. And it's always the same reaction from the guy holding the camera. What the F? They just cannot believe the acceleration from 100 to 200. It's not just 0 to 60 like a super fast Porsche would do or a motorcycle. It is the 100 plus that is this car can do that no other car can, I think.
Correct.
All right. Yeah. That's the voice
but
of Terrence.
At least the laws allow that.
Right.
Terrence Jenkins is on the phone right now from Regara Coach right now, and that's our friend Lightning. We're talking about these crazy expensive cars. There's no place. Is there any place in America you can go to even drive one of these things at 200 miles an hour that's not a racetrack, though, Terrence? I mean, when would you ever get a chance to air this thing out?
I mean, very, very limited places where you could drive this car at full speed. You know, if you're in one of those categories of the one percenters, you've probably got access to a private runway. You know, Texas.
Private runway.
Did you say a private runway?
Well, you know, where you land your planes, Kevin. You can use that.
Very true.
There are clubs, Bean, that you can actually go and be a part of that will rent out a runway or a racetrack and things like that. There's a Ferrari FXX that when you buy it, Kevin, you don't get to keep the car. It is housed only at the racetracks. So you pay I don't know how much the car is. It's over $2 million for this car. And you go and you fly to the car. You drive it on a track day.
I want to drive
and then
it home.
And then Ferrari keeps it. And
but
you go,
I paid for it.
It's crazy. That's the world that this – it's the next level that you and I will never play in.
That's insane.
It's crazy. All right, Terrence, before we say goodbye to you and thank you for coming on the program today, how about a discount for Kevin and Bean listeners if they want to come in today and buy a Bugatti? How much off will you give them?
15% today. Do you come in and buy the car?
15%. That's a lot of money. That is a lot of money.
So it's like 30 grand, so you're still paying 1.9.
I'll take you out to our private racetrack because obviously we provide all these fantastic supercars. Agora Coach has their own private racetrack where you can take delivery of your car at the track and we'll teach you how to drive it as well. And I'll do that for you guys too.
Is this the most important, most expensive car?
It is not.
Not.
No.
What is the most important expensive car? I'm sorry.
You're probably looking at, I believe, a Koenigsegg, a Jira 1-1 is going to be about $4.2 million, and they're slating that car to be a 280-mile-an-hour car.
Yeah, because why would you want the stupid Bugatti that only goes 255?
All these manufacturers are one-upping each other with their engineering prowess. And remember, these cars have to be engineered not only to be fast, but also safe. So this is one of the reasons why these vehicles are so expensive because they are driven on the road. Unlike a race car, there's many race cars out there that can achieve these speeds, but they don't have to adhere to all the federal regulations and safety and all that.
Exactly. Stinking airbags.
Which is why they deliver them on a truck or something like that to the racetrack. They don't drive them there. All right, listen, we are out of time. This is a fascinating topic. I know we've just scratched the surface of Terrence, but thanks so much for coming on and sharing your expertise. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Enjoyed it. Thank you so much, guys. We got a
Bugatti. I woke up in a new Bugatti. You are listening to the best of Kevin and Bean here on the world-famous K-Rock. K-R-O-Q FM 106.7. Pleasure to have you with me today. We're having a good time this week, aren't we? Just you and me. Me doing Showbiz Beat. You there doing whatever it is you're doing. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. I don't know what you're doing in the privacy of your own car or your own room. Just be happy we're together, okay? The boys will be back next week. Meanwhile, I'll be bringing you live Showbiz Beats all week long. And tomorrow, special guest, diminutive comedian Brad Williams is going to be stopping by. He better bring some goddamn breakfast. That's all I'm saying. It's the only reason I want him to stop by. Bring me food and put it in a sombrero and wear it on your head so I can eat it off you.
Beware of the midgets. Mm-hmm. They're taking over the world.
That's what I'm saying. Brad's going to come by and keep me company for a couple Showbiz Beats. So make sure to come back tomorrow. In the meantime, if you were lucky enough to be at the Fonda Theater here in Los Angeles on May the 20th, you may remember a little band called the Rolling Stones playing a gig. Who am I kidding? You weren't there. I wasn't there. Nobody was there. If you weren't a star, you didn't get in because it's a tiny room and regular people couldn't make it into that show. But the good news is regular people like us can now hear what the show was. It's now for sale as a download. The band did its entire album from 1971, Sticky Fingers, one of the greats. And you can get it now at the iTunes store if you want to check it out. So, enjoy that. While you're buying stuff, you want to buy a Velociraptor claw? If you're a Jurassic Park fan, if you like Jurassic World, if you think you're Chris Pratt and you just hold your hands out all the time in front of people and make them stay in place, you can own your own Velociraptor claw.
Yeah.
Claw's up for sale on a Chinese website. It is 71 million years old and can be yours for the low, low price of $12,500. $12,500. You know what? For that kind of money, I want a brand new Velociraptor claw. I don't want some old used one that's 71 million years old. Get me one of those fresh ones. Go in the back and get me a fresh one. Thinking of money today. How to spend it. I think this was money well spent, and I hope you spent some on it, too. You may have heard our friend Adam Nimoy came on the show not too long ago to talk about his
late beloved father Leonard Nimoy and the character of Mr. Spock that he played for so many years in the Star Trek world. He's working on a documentary film called For the Love of Spock, basically documenting his father's creation of the character and long association with that character. And we were talking to Adam because it's an expensive proposition. In order to show his dad working in the TV series and on the feature films, he had to license those clips from Paramount Pictures, and that was going to be expensive. There was a lot of expenses connected up with this documentary that I really wanted to see. So I donated some money to it. We had Adam Nimoy come on to talk about it and talk about the Kickstarter page over there at Kickstarter.com for The Love of Spock. And I'm happy to announce that today, with just 30 hours to go, it has been fully funded. It has been fully funded. They reached their goal of $600,000 to help pay for the licensing fees and the other costs for producing the documentary. So it's good news. Looks like we're going to get that For Love of Spock documentary after all. Now, it's not too late. You can still donate. Like I mentioned, there's still about 30 hours left. Every penny helps the production of this. So if you are a Star Trek fan like me and you want to see this in all its glory, feel free to go over to Kickstarter.com and just punch in For the Love of Spock, and you can see details on the documentary. But I want to give those guys a shout out and congratulate them on funding the movie, because I think it's going to be awesome. More geek news. Bitten has been renewed for a third season over there on the Sci-Fi cable network. If you're a werewolf fan, they do a real good job with that show over there. I'm enjoying it. Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, has just been cast into a new film. It stars Daniel and Paul Dano and Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Great cast. It's called Swiss Army Man, and it's the story of a hopeless man who's stranded in the wild, where he finds and befriends a dead body. Then together, they go on a journey to get home. No word on who's playing the man or who's playing the dead body, but this sounds effing shaky. This sounds like a weird movie, and Daniel Radcliffe only seems to want to do weird movies now. Either got horns growing out of his head, or his best friend's a dead man. Just pick up the wand, Dan. Put on the glasses. Give us a little more wizardry, won't you, once in a while? You're a weird duck. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. All these stars were born on today, June the 30th. David Alan Greer is 59 years old today. Mike Tyson turns 49. Monica Potter is 44 years old. Lizzie Kaplan of Masters of Sex is 33 years old today. Olympian swimmer Michael Phelps turns 30. And rapper Modest Yahoo. Modest Yahoo. Myself to you now from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want my she off now. Time and start revealing what's this feeling. My love will rip the skylight in the ceiling. Give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God songs of love and healing. Yeah, that is one wacky rapping Jew right there, folks. Modest Yahoo celebrates his 36th birthday. Come on back tomorrow on the Kevin and Bean Show. Much more hilarity with the best of Kevin and Bean. Showbiz beat, Brad Williams will be stopping by. I want to see you here, or at least hear you here. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.